Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights at the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights at the round table, our shows are more, we're able. So many times we give and blind to our quiet unseen label. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
hear... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He is he, to serve the table. All rise for a king to serve the table and the knights of the round table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions, just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
Trust. trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised. No pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble. I have no friends to help me now. He has no friends to help him now. Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be happy. The landlord say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be happy.
Look at me, I'm happy. Don't worry, be happy. Can I give you my phone number? When you worry, call me. I need to happy.
Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. But don't worry, be happy. Cause when you worry, your face will frown, and that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, don't worry, don't do it. Be happy.
Put a smile on your face. Don't bring everybody down like this.
Don't worry,
it will soon pass, whatever it is. Don't worry.
Always working to serve the parable and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. Hope you're all doing well out there. And hope my microphone's working fine. We'll find that out pretty soon when people start saying they can't hear me. That's all right. Anyway, I wanted to start this show off today with a short phrase. Just breathe. Simple as that. You know, I always try to bring subjects to the table that are going to open the dialogue and open up a mindset that gets people hope in life, knowing that the world is the way that it is. Somebody got some things going on in the background. Anyway, knowing the way the world is out there and all the things that we've been told by alternative media and mainstream media, and, you know, just all the information flood that's been going on, trying to sort through it all, trying to find resolutions and solutions for problems that exist in the world. We're at, let me see, show, this is number 213. 213 times we come together on this show and try to point out things, work on things, come up with ideas and solutions, and rally the troops. You know, Sundays, before the Knights of the Round Table, there's a lot of stuff that goes on before the show ever even comes about. Muddy, could you mute your mic, please? Thanks. Anyway, there's a whole lot of things that happen before this show even starts on Sundays. I get up at 6 o'clock a.m. and get my coffee ready, and I wander around, and I think about life, and I think about what's going on and what needs to be addressed. And I get out there and I look up and see what's happening in the news media, see what people are talking about, see what kind of directions the world's going in. And sometimes it might be political, sometimes it might be something else. Sometimes I might just pick some subject from just at random and let it take a life of its own. Let it see what the story is going to be around the table. Sometimes there's certain phrases that I hear personally that just really get on my nerves, but either way. So I jump on my YouTube channel and I go on, click on that home deal, and I see what's happening out there on YouTube, and maybe I even jump over to the Facebook and see what the world's doing out there, and just kind of look in, try to figure it all out. It's not always an easy task, but the show starts 2 hours prior to the time it actually starts to come on air, before I ever even speak a word, before any of the intros play or the little podcast play about particular subjects, 2 hours prior. So I dedicate at least 5 hours every Sunday to jumping on the Knights of the Round Table. I open the microphone up for everybody and his brother to come sit around the table and to have a dialogue about everything, find solutions and things. And a lot of times, if the subject starts to seem to go south or whatever, I try to steer it into a more positive direction, because I don't want to sit here and talk about lizards or doggone secret societies or corrupt governments without trying to figure out some way that we can rally the troops to fix it. I don't like the Knights of the Round Table being perceived as a negative, standing on a soapbox rant kind of craziness. And so, you know, with that said, I open the dialogue up, I open the microphone, I invite people from all different directions, all different walks of life, to try to figure this world out. Maybe we can't figure this out. Maybe the whole world is so messed up and the governments are so corrupt and the secret societies and the demons of the world, maybe it's so messed up we can't fix it. You go scan through the headlines and there's so many different things to talk about. There's so many different issues on the table. And one would think that that was just like completely overwhelming, completely impossible. The ludicrous of some of the things that liberal activists do, or groups like 4chan out there doing the things that they do on their website. You know, there was a story basically about how they put a story out about cutting yourself, and teenagers would send pictures of them cutting themselves. And they started a lot of trends. That particular website started a whole lot of different trends out there on the internet. This internet has been become, you know, there's a dark side of the web as well as a light side of the web, and as well as an educational side of the web. You never know what you're going to find when you look out here into this crazy matrix that we call the internet. I like to point out to people, you know, there's a lot of knowledge out here at your fingertips. There's a lot of ways that we could actually make the world a better place. And even when it comes to talking about political views or mainstream media lies and deception and propaganda, that same thing could also apply to the alternative media. There's a lot of fear-monger sites out there. There's a lot of people out there asking everybody for money. Hey, send me money so I can keep this show going. And I don't sit out here and ask my listeners for money. I'll sit out here and tell them, I need your money to keep this show going. Because if I truly believe in the subjects and the mission that Shaziz Radio is going, I got to be willing to sacrifice my own money to keep it going. And so I'm not sitting out here trying to further any other agenda other than to bring people to the table to try to solve issues in the world. And not all of my ideas are going to be good ideas. And I got to choose my words wisely so that they're not perceived in the wrong direction as to where I'm trying to take what it is that I'm trying to convey to people. It's not an easy task. Sometimes it could be really seriously frustrating. Because my mind is complex. I'm a unique individual who thinks differently than every single other person on this planet. There ain't no other individual who thinks like I do. There ain't no other individual who has the same exact views as I have. There's nobody else that has the same exact feelings about certain subjects that I have. Everyone out there is their own personal individual. And their stories matter. Their opinion matters. Their views matter. That's why the microphone is here, for people to get up there and to work with one another to try to solve things that need to be solved in this world. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. It's not about old King Shaziz the Terrible chooses a subject and that's what we're talking about regardless of whether you like it or not. It's not that. I choose a subject that is on my mind. I start off a dialogue and then everyone else jumps in when they feel like it. When something that interests them or they have another subject that they want to talk about. So, for the most part, the Knights of the Round Table takes a life of its own. It takes the life of a group of individuals who have a bit of a concern about the state of the Union, the state of the world, the state of anything. New innovations in the world, new solutions to different problems in the world. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. It's not about any one individual or any one subject. It's about when you look out there and you see the information that's presented to you of what the world is. If you look through my eyes once and you will see when I look out in the world, I see chaos. I see a lack of common sense. I see a lack of concern for others. I see some individuals who believe themselves to be so intelligent, nothing you have to say is going to matter in their realm of existence at all. And you're always wrong about everything that you say. I don't have all the answers, folks. And I never claim to have all the answers. All I have is my perception of what I see when I look into the world. I can go outside, stand on my front doorstep, and I can look out in my front yard, and I can look around my neighborhood, and I don't see all these tragedies unfolding before my very eyes. I've been told when I watch the news that there's things going on in the world that need to be addressed. there's suffering out there. And as a human, and somebody who, you know, has a heart of concern for others, and, you know, I don't think the world revolves around me. I think that there are people out there that are telling me that we've got wars going on this side of our planet. We've got starvation going on that side of the planet. We've got sickness in this area of the planet. And we've got troubles. And so when I hear those things, it troubles my heart. So if you notice that last song that I played on there, before we came on the air here, was "Don't Worry, Be Happy." When I first got up this morning and I started off my process to begin the show, and I thought about all the overwhelming content out there and potential subjects to talk about, it was put on my heart to talk about how to make it so that people out there could survive while searching through this chaotic mess of information. And the only words that come to my mind was just breathe. Because sometimes I really find it hard to breathe. I find it really frustrating. If our world, you know, on the political side there, when Trump was elected, I was relieved because I thought, you know, here's a guy that's going to get out there and he's going to work for the people and he's going to do for the people, and it's a change against the status quo, and I actually had a calm sense about myself that I felt like America's going to have an opportunity to come back and try to redeem itself for any discretions or whatever that had happened in the past, and try to move forward into a positive future, and, you know, clean our house up and get things in order. I know that one man can't do that by himself, but one uniting voice that comes out there and speaks the right words and brings the people together and, you know, says the right things and is a leader for their community. It's about the best you can ask from anybody, even an individual, the average Joe in your own community. That's the best you can ask, is try to be the leader, try to lead by example. Maybe he will fail, maybe he will succeed. But for those who believe in what it is that he's trying to accomplish, they need to support that man. And for those who believe in what I'm trying to accomplish, or anybody on the Knights of the Round Table are trying to accomplish, then they need to support those individuals. We need to support one another. We need to have the conscious understanding that we got to be patient with one another when somebody's trying to get something done. It may not be the way, the shortest route. I don't know the shortest route to any solution out there, with exception of first saying that before you make any choices in life, you exercise some common sense. Common sense is probably going to be the best solution to anything out there. I mean, common sense says if it hurt the first time you did it, then it's probably going to hurt the second time, so you don't want to stick your finger in the fire. I got to peek out into the world, otherwise I don't know what to talk to people about, because I don't know what the issues are, I don't know what the problems are. But at some point in my life, somebody told me there was a starving baby, and that dug to my core. Why is there a starving baby in 2017? Somebody told me there was a homeless man down underneath the bridge, and he's hungry too. And that dug me to the core. And so I looked deeper out there, tried to find the reason why. Why is these people hungry? Why is these people starving? And to me, it made no sense whatsoever. It was no common sense to it all, because there shouldn't be any reason why there's a baby in this world starving. There shouldn't be any reason why there's a homeless man, unless he chooses to be a homeless man. There shouldn't be any reason why we've gone over bombing people who didn't attack us. We've been told that people come from other nations and they flew planes into a tower and dropped them to the ground. The alternative media said that it was an inside job from our government. Our government did it. Whichever side of that fence you stand on, if you're just standing there and you stop prejudging situations before and just look at the facts that are presented to you and the things that you've been told, you now got two opposing views. One is an inside job. One is people coming from another country. So now what do we got to do here? We got to investigate. We got to find out, was this truthfully an inside job, or was it truthfully people from other sides of the world? And from that point on, we got to decide how we're going to resolve this. And the only two solutions is to investigate the government for this portion of it, investigate and slow down immigration for that part of it. Is that fair to everybody? No, it's not. Because just like you see in normal society, when there's a section of people that do things bad under the name of whatever subject they're doing it, everyone else pays the price in this world. If somebody goes out and shoots up a school, suddenly there's a group of individuals who's anti-gun and they have to get out there and lobby the world to ban all the guns, ban everything, ban this and ban that. But it was all, in the beginning, it was all information presented to each of these individuals that made them react in a certain direction or manner in which they did. And so how do you throw common sense into the mix out there? How do you throw a hold on, slow down, catch your breath kind of thing, step back, look at the big picture, see what's really going on out there? Well, you put a group together called the Knights of the Round Table. And you bring brilliant individuals like Thomas and Muddy and Jermaine and Stephen and Raymond, you bring them to the table and you bring other people to the table and you spread the word that we're actually trying to resolve this thing peacefully by sitting down and having a meeting or a talk and pointing out and putting things on the table that could potentially steer this mess away from what it is. Otherwise, what you're left with is the total chaos that you see every time I click on my homepage on YouTube to see what people are trying to show me, recommended videos from past videos that I've researched, for politics to alternative energy to conspiracy theories. And after a while, it becomes a big chaotic mess. And you feel like you ain't making no ground. You're not moving forward. You feel like you're spinning your tires in the mud and you can't get anywhere down the road. You can't get everybody to stop long enough to understand the ridiculousness of what's going on. I'm looking at some pictures where some women are doing some pretty whacked out things in protest. It's the picture she's holding in her hand is like, why would you do that? And I'm seeing things on subjects such as the flat earth, the round earth, the space conspiracies and all this kind of stuff. And I'm seeing the mainstream news and talking about subjects that should have either been investigated a long time ago or long said and gone. I'm listening to people talk about racism and hate and discontent, while on the other side of the doggone fence, other people out there trying to get resolutions and build things and create things. You got a section of society who are actually digging in and trying to move humanity forward, while you've got another section of society out there protesting everything under the sun. misconstruing people's words and taking it down to a different area where somebody else who just jumped on the bandwagon thinks that they're, you know, justified in going out and tearing up their own communities because they're mad because somebody was violated. Now, it may not be not one single thing that I can do about any of that. You know, somebody once told me that the whole world's burdens weren't mine to bear, to take, not to put that weight on my shoulders. You try to tell that to my brain, and my brain can understand that. But you try to tell that to my heart is going to resist you with everything it's got because of the fact that I care. What's the point? If I don't care, I wouldn't even be sitting here talking right now. It wouldn't be no purpose for me to sit here and talk. If I didn't care, I could just get off this doggone internet, never look into it ever again, remove every single digital device and computer and cell phone and home phone and every type of communication away from me as far as I could possibly get it and never look back again. And I might actually be able to live in peace. But deep in the back of my mind and in the depths of my heart, I would always think that, wait a second, we never resolved that starving baby across the world. We never resolved it. And here I am, I'm living happily ever after because I don't have to listen to all this craziness. But we never resolved that. They told me there was a starving baby in this world, and we never resolved it. So, I would never be able to live in peace by just getting up and walking away. My heart wouldn't allow me to. My mind would, because it would save me some sanity. But my heart wouldn't allow me to. And I feel like there's other people out in this world that have the same kind of heart. Sometimes the heart's a burden. Sometimes it's obnoxious because you care. I get excited when people win. I get sad when they fail. That's the human condition. If you're really seriously caring about one another and you really seriously want this world to be a better place, that's what we do. And it's not as easy as it sounds to shut your mind off. It's not as easy as it sounds to not look into what's happening out there. It's like during a scary movie when you try to cover your eyes, but you're still peeking through the cracks of your fingers because you just gotta know what the heck is happening. The Knights of the Round Table isn't a table full of gods. The Knights of the Round Table is a table full of humans who actually seen that there's a need out there. Heck, if we were gods, we could have done fixed it all. But in that same breath, we're not by any means hopeless. And so, I can't tolerate it when people come by and tell me there ain't nothing you can do about it. There ain't no way you can fix it. It's corrupt. There's secret societies behind there. There's aliens that are going to try to kill you or whatever. In my book that many despise out there, it says, no man knows the time or day that he'd come like a thief in the night. It's the same thing with death. I don't know when I'm going to die. It could be today, tomorrow, could be 5 minutes from now if I bust an aneurysm and have a heart attack or something from all the stress of trying to get this thing resolved. I don't know. I don't know when the end of the world's coming. I don't know when doomsday's on us. I don't know. All I can tell you is what I've seen and what I've heard, and that all I know is my heart says that if somebody told me there's a starving baby in the world, then I gotta figure out some way to resolve it. Solve it. Put the solution on the table. That's what the Knights of the Round Table is all about. And for those who don't agree with that, then, you know, hey, I don't know what to say. I said, this is why I do what I do. They said that the world had an energy crisis. So I threw my hat in the ring and started working on alternative energy. I had a dispute with a power company, so I made them a promise. I'm going to study everything I can about alternative energy and put it out there for free to everybody. Not to mention the fact that I was told that there were people going overseas and fighting other nations for their resources and their oil, and to be able to have gas lines run through their property all the way down to wherever it is, so that some company or corporation or the governments in general can make money off of it. So, their agenda is to convince me that it's all right to go to war because this guy supposedly did something. We got to get this guy out of office over here in this other country. Yeah, he's not my representative. Why do I need him out of office? I need you to be doing the job that you're supposed to be doing because you are my representative. I don't need to destabilize that nation. I don't need a regime change in that nation. What I need is results here in my country so that we can lead by example the rest of the world and show them how a real country does it. How real freedom looks. And so, when you're telling me all this stuff, that the world is terrible out there, and my heart says, well, you know, if it's terrible out there, we got to find a resolution for everybody else. Because I'm living pretty good. And I think the rest of the Knights are living pretty good. We got our own issues and our own health problems and our own financial despairs, our ups and downs. But for the most part, we're doing pretty good. And we'd like to see other people in this world do pretty good too. I'd like to see people have comforts of air conditioning and warm blankets and clothing and food and medicines that they need. I can shout it to all four points of the compass with this microphone, but unless I can get a general consensus that if we all come to the table and we all try to resolve these things together, it's not a one-man deal. What have you done? All we do is talk. Well, if all I got is what I got right now to work with, if I had finances to go out there and give everybody in this world a sandwich, I'd do exactly that. If I won the lottery tomorrow, every single bit of it would be gone the next day because I would buy food and shelter and whatever I could for everyone else out there in the world because I don't need to be standing on a mountain of money. I don't need my pants weighted down with silver and gold. The most important thing in my world is my heart and my family and my friends and the dream of everybody being able to feel that. What it means to have a grandchild come run up there and say, I love you, Grandpa. It's a wonderful thing. I'd like everyone else out there in the world to be able to experience that as well. I'd like you to be able to sleep at night without having to worry about who's coming through your door, whether it's the government or the crooks or the terrorists. There's so much out there. There's so many crazy protests going on. People holding up disgusting signs. People pointing fingers and calling each other racist and all this kind of craziness. And this is what I have been told. This is the information that has been shown to me. And I deal with it in my own personal, unique way, just like each and every one of you. I got my own personal spiritual journey. I got my own personal political views. And they ain't always going to match up to anybody's out there. It might be in the close general vicinity. But the best I can do is sit down here at this round table in cyberspace with my friends. My friends who prop me up when I'm down and correct me when I'm wrong and help to teach me, and hopefully I help to do the same for them. The Knights of the Round Table has a code of honor. It's, if you go over to the podcast page and you read it, you'll first note that there's a knight, a humble, on his knees. It said, Knight's Code of Honors, let truth, honor, justice, respect, fairness, wisdom, courage, and the love for one another be our guide. Grant us the wisdom to do what is right. And if you agree with that, then you are one of the Knights of the Round Table, no matter where you're listening from. No matter if you're able to make it into the chat room, no matter if you're able to make it onto Skype and be part of the conversation live on air, if you believe that the Knight's Code of Honor, let truth, honor, justice, respect, fairness, wisdom, courage, and the love for one another be our guide and grant us the wisdom to do what is right. If those words resonate in your heart and your mind, and you believe in those words, then you are one of the Knights of the Round Table. That's what it's about, folks. And for those who feel not up to the challenge and it seems to be an overwhelming task, that right underneath that same picture is another picture. It's really, really cute. It's got a little squirrel and a shiny suit of armor. He's got a little tiny sword on his side, and he's got a little shield in front of him. And there's a phrase at the top of it and says, even the smallest knight can make a difference. It means you don't have to be a giant financially or physically, and you don't have to be able to go out there and conquer the whole doggone world by yourself, because you got other knights out there who have your back no matter what. And because you all believe in truth and justice and fairness, and because you exercise wisdom, you show these people around the world how you live. And when they see how it works for you, and when they agree with that same code of honor, then they'll do the same. That is the positive pebble that I keep talking about. That's the positive pebble in that pond. I never want to lose sight of why I started this to begin with. There was a man from a radio network that got me interested in doing radio to begin with. He liked something I said, some political dissidents or something, the way that I said it. He seen something in what I said to be worthy and asked me if I'd be interested in doing the show, and I said no at first. And then the more I got to thinking about it, and the more I got to thinking that maybe, just maybe, I might be able to help somebody else out there in this world. Teach them some things. And I started the Mad Science Show at first, and then as I got going on through the radio deal, and the more we got into all kinds of different subjects, and I got to thinking that, you know, if we're looking for solutions, the best way to find those solutions is to bring people to the table. And the Knights of the Round Table was born. It's been a long journey, but we've learned a lot on the way. Sometimes you just gotta stop and breathe. Sometimes you got to take the breath. It's not always easy to do. It's not something that is for somebody of a weak heart. You have to really love people in order to try to do what it is that we do. Otherwise, you turn around and walk away. The task is too big. That's what it's all about, folks. And for those of you who believe in the Knights Code of Honor, share these podcasts with people. Some of the things we said in there might make people mad, some might make them laugh, some might make them cry, I don't know. It's just because we've had some roller coasters. So with that said, I got Thomas on here, and I got Muddy on here. Either one of y'all got anything to bring to the table that you want to talk about, or anything about what I said? And Muddy, your microphone's still muted. Well.
Yep, sure is. So I wonder why you could hear me. Excuse me.
So what's on your mind, Muddy?
Oh, just kind of looking over life and noticing how your views change as you get a little older.
That's a part of wisdom.
It seems like all the things you go through, you learn a lesson. And there's a price to it, and it costs you. It goes backwards. And you say, gosh, I'll never do that again. But you got this lesson that you learned. It had a price. It's pretty valuable. The more you learn, the more it seems like them other lessons weren't all that smart or as valuable. You start to learn, you start to figure things out, and you look back 2 years on your life and say, gosh, I was pretty stupid back then. Two more years go by, and you look back and say, yeah, I thought I was pretty smart. I'm pretty stupid back then. Seems like the more you know, and the more you realize, the more you back up and look at things, the more your values change. Heck, you stop being that invincible, oh, idiot that used to sit there and buck up to every challenge. And you start to grow, you know, you start to look at yourself in the eyes of that old man that used to look at you and shake his head when you were acting stupid. Now you're looking back and say, yeah, he was right.
Well, life is without a doubt a humbling experience, because you get to a certain point in life and you realize that you're really not the center of the world. You're the center of your world.
So what do you do about all the crazies in the world now that just need to learn what you already learned? Yes. I'm becoming sentimental. Cry easy. I love easy. I want to reach out and grab my kid and give him a big old hug. You know, too busy. It's like that song, Cats in the Cradle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I keep referring back to the same thing of Abba Father. What Abba Father was, you know, isn't Jehovah Jireh my provider? It isn't all these other things. It's Abba Father. What does Abba Father mean? It means daddy. Daddy. You start to realize that all this stupid stuff, the gold, all these things that the world is fighting over ain't near as precious as, I love you, Daddy. And look down, and tear comes to the eye, and you just gotta scoop that kid up, and, oh man, just hug him to you as tight as you can there without breaking him, and just, oh yeah, give me more of that. I love you.
Well,
did you make this mess? And you look and you say, did you make this mess? Yeah.
It reminded me of a time I was standing out. I was standing out by a barn that I was working on, and it was late at night, and my family was inside, settled in for the night, and I was out working on this barn, and it took forever and a day, it seemed like, to get this doggone barn cleaned up, because the barn was in really bad disrepair, and I did some work and cleaned it out and tried to make it to where, you know, it was usable again. And I was sitting out and standing out there, and I'm looking at this thing, and this big feeling of despair just rushed right over the top of me, and I realized, I looked at that old barn, and I realized that we spend our lifetimes building our homes and, you know, trying to gather our wealth and getting everything situated and trying to provide for our family. But long after we're gone, those houses that look so beautiful, that are all painted up and, you know, you did all that work and all the time you did grooming the land and trimming the trees and all that kind of stuff. When you're gone, nature takes it back. Nature takes the house down. It, if there ain't somebody living in it and ain't upkeeping it, then it all will deteriorate. And so while we're sitting here trying to build our castles on this place that we call Earth, the clock's ticking. You got family that, like you said, Muddy, are the most important portion of your life. And there's a lot of fathers out there that spend the majority of their time trying to gather up the wealth, because that's all they can think about, is they got to be the best provider and they got to live in the nicest house and treat their family to everything good in the world. But sometimes they lose sight.
What happens when your kid grows up and you're trying to buy him a Ferrari? And the kid goes, "I don't want a Ferrari. I hate you." And he walks out of the showroom floor, you know?
Well, then you buy yourself a Ferrari.
I actually saw that. I walked up to the man and said, "You can adopt me, Bubba." I'll thank you. He looked at me and said, "Nice try," and stuffed a $100 bill in my pocket.
But...
that was very nice of him. But,
the whole point is getting your priorities straight in a world such as the one we live in is a tough deal, and it's a journey. You know?
The only thing that man wanted to hear was, "I love you, Dad. Thank you. Oh, this is great." That's all he wanted to hear. Boy, that becomes more valuable than money. I mean, that's a lot of money. Oh, gone. I wonder what the price of that last one was. It had to be huge.
I don't know, but how do you get that feeling into the hearts of the people out there doing the things that they do? There's folks out there in the liberal community that talk about peace, love, and harmony and all that and caring about people and women's rights and, you know, caring about minorities, and they don't see the hypocrisy of what they're actually doing to other people out there. They don't see that. And all the protesting, while you're out there protesting, save the trees, there's some fish dying or some polluted crud rolling down into the doggone stream, or while you're out there protesting and fighting with the government for everything under the sun, there ain't nothing getting done. All you're doing is making things worse by getting other people riled up. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen this happen before, but there'll be a fight will break out. And normally people will talk against fighting. They talk about being peaceful, right? But when the fight breaks out, you see people running from all different directions just to watch the show, man.
Poke him in the eye. Kick him in the knee.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so if you're encouraging the fight to go on, the two guys who probably might have stopped fighting because the first couple punches hurt, but now it's a matter of, it's a matter of their pride that they got to win this fight so that, you know, nobody else make fun of them, or you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The same thing applies when you talk about wars out there with other countries and stuff. When you start to fight with them, it's a matter of pride and whatever. I'm gonna show them. But if everybody out there's got that mindset, I'm gonna show you. You know. Well, yeah, you showed me all right. We both lost. We're both missing teeth, and we both have black eyes. We're both in pain. And, you know, we really didn't get anything resolved because I still disagree with you, and you still disagree with me. So where do we go from here? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, on the Knights of the Round Table, we're trying to put out some ideas, some common sense. Some other paths that could be taken as opposed to the ones that are out there. You know, I wish I could stop every war that ever happened on this planet. I wish I could stop all the fighting and the fussing and the disease. And if I had the power within my grasp to fix it, I'd do it, but I don't. And maybe for a good reason, because my way of fixing it might not be, what everybody else in the world wants.
You know, people just trade what they got in their services and do what they got to do. Quit trying to live off the free, live free off the government or this or that. Just start helping each other. You know, the word communion, well, that's a strange word. It's a deep word. It starts with community. Fellowship. When you pray, you commune with God. When you meet at the church, that's communion. Not just taking the sacraments and stuff. It's bringing into the storehouse. But you have extra. You got a guy who farms corn. Well, he can't just eat corn, and he can't eat all of it. Bring it into the storehouse. Next thing you know, while you're there, here's a guy, bringing furs. What do we need money? You know, if it wasn't for all the stupid technology, and if it wasn't for all the panic that it we really wouldn't need money.
Well, there's some out there that want to go to a cashless society, but regardless of all that, I'd have to say this.
If you have to fix the economy instead of just get rid of it.
Well, look, man.
If people would freak out and they would not go for it, it's no way possible. If you had to fix it, I'd say let's put, I don't care if you got to go backwards. She says,
I can't.
How much gold can you buy for a dollar? Okay, well, we're gonna go ahead and change it over. We're gonna give you 50 cents worth of gold for your dollar, but that will be its value from then on. That dollar from now on, every dollar that you got is worth that 50 cents worth of gold that you bought it for. Within 2 years, you know what? Your money is worth more, 4 or 5 times more than it was when you bought that 50 cents worth of gold. That's what I'm saying. Even if you go backwards, just put it back on the gold. Or, better yet, let's put the gold in our hands.
Well,
everything doesn't transfer with gold.
You can have my share of gold. You can have my share of silver. If you sit back
what's more
and
important
listen,
is that hug around the neck and I love you, Daddy.
Yeah,
I love you.
Well, you can have my, you can have my, you can listen.
We won't have wars.
Listen, you can have my share of gold and you can have my share of silver. You know, in the whole gun debate, people say guns don't kill people; people kill people. The same thing in technology. And the same thing in money. It's not the money, it's not the technology, it's not the guns, it's not the knives, it's not the tools, it is what people choose to do with those things. And since history has shown that people have continuously battled over gold and silver and diamonds and resources, then the easiest way to stop that battle in their mind would be to get rid of the gold, get rid of the silver, get rid of the resources, get rid of everything that people want to fight over, and then there ain't no fighting no more. But if society, if the human mind is to ever reach a stage of enlightenment to where we, I don't know, go up to a higher level of existence, then people have got to find the wisdom to take that gold and use it wisely and not fight over it. They got to figure out a way to take these tools that they've been provided and this technology that they've been provided and figure out a way to utilize that to benefit everyone out there. And until mankind in its overall sense comes to that bit of enlightenment, we're sitting here watching the same old things repeat itself over and over in history, where people are dying over $20 in somebody else's pocket. People are dying over resources. They're dying for lack of resources. And when a man stands in front of you and says, "Hold on a second, looks to me like there's a whole lot of land out there. Couldn't y'all like just divide it up here evenly and everybody get along?"
Well, there's land beyond that too.
Well, yeah, there's land as far as the eye can see. I'm not saying that if a man wants to work hard and earn a million acres of land, if he takes that land and he does the best with his family and everybody else that helps people out with that land, that's a great thing, you know? But in reality, when that man dies, he can't take that with him. He might pass it on down to his families, but think about the whole process of all everything that I've been saying here. And, you know, the richest families in the world, they live on, you know, thousands of acres of land and in really nice houses and all that. And they want to keep that power structure for their family forever and a day. They want to be so powerful nobody can ever take this away from them, and so they do dirty deeds in order to keep it. When in reality, you know, you built your stairway to heaven in gold. And when you go out the same way you came in, man. You ain't got none of that gold in your pockets when you're standing at the pearly gates. Or wherever it is that you go after that. The most important part of life that we got going on right here is the most important lesson that anybody could have learned all along. The most valuable thing in this world is the ones that you love. The most powerful tool that you ever had, the most powerful form of payment or value or whatever, is the love that comes out of your heart. I know that sounds utopian, and I know it sounds all mushy, you know. But the truth of the matter is, tell me a single tough guy out there in the world who, when their grandbaby runs up and tells you, "I love you, Grandpa," you tell me any of the biggest, baddest guy out there on the planet who ain't going to have their heart melted by the power of that little child saying that to them. And so that is the lesson of life, you know. Live life in love. That is the lesson of life. All these other things that we're arguing and bickering over, they're nothing.
Or you just go to that baby and his face just lights up, his eyes squint, his mouth is as wide as it can be, and he starts laughing at you. Oh, you think that's funny, huh? You got that kid's whole attention. It's almost like being worshipped. Man, there's nothing like it.
No, it's a wonderful deal, and that's the reason why a lot of people feel justified in doing what it is that we're doing, sitting around talking about things, trying to sort things out. Hopefully the other ears hearing this will adopt some of that into their life. You know, I talk about this world coming together and being united. I'm not talking about under some one world religion or some one world government or anything like that. I'm talking about under some one world idea of all of us lifting each other up to the highest levels that humanity can actually go. Sure, we can tear this world apart. We can war with each other, and we can lie and steal and cheat and rob and rape and loot and pillage and watch our brothers and sisters fall by the wayside as they die from disease and war and hunger. And we can actually bring each other up, and we can motivate each other with our words and our actions and our love and try to do something good about this whole thing. You know, to some people, I'm standing on a soapbox. That's probably the most offensive phrase that I've ever heard in my entire life because it demeans my message. When somebody tells me that I'm standing on a soapbox or I'm ranting, it demeans my message. It takes away from what I'm trying to share from my heart with everyone else out there. And it's another monkey wrench in the machine. I'd like to hear what's on their heart. I'd like to hear their stories. I'm the kind of guy who, when I'm driving down through the country and I got a lot of time on my hands because it's a long journey, and I look over and I see an old farmhouse, I don't just think about that house. I look at that house and I see the disrepair of that house, and I wonder what the family was like that lived in that house at one point in time. What their dreams and their hopes and aspirations were. Their trials and tribulations, because everyone out there has a story. The homeless guy's got a reason why he's where he's at. The starving baby, same thing. But if you look out and you can see somebody else's plight, and you can honestly feel it from your own soul that something isn't right, and these people shouldn't have to suffer like this, and you have concern in your heart that you want to make it better for them, then together, you do that. Somebody in the Knights of the Round Table is trying to call. Can you see who wants in and Adam?
I'm already on it, Bubba.
So, that's why we're here. That's why we do what we do here. And I hope that those folks out there listening can understand the purpose. I hope that you just listen to these words. Knight's Code of Honor. Let truth, honor, justice, respect, fairness, wisdom, courage, and the love for one another be our guide. Grant us the wisdom to do what is right. That's how much better can you say it than that?
Barry wants to know if he's allowed.
Of course he's allowed to come in.
he says, hold on a minute, I'll put on my suit and tie. Give me a minute. Be the best way he ever looked.
I want people to understand that this is what it's all about. When I throw a positive pebble in the pond, that's my way of trying to send a message out to the world that's actually going to try to uplift somebody's spirit, or, you know, put a smile on their face, or, you know, motivate them to do the same for somebody else. It's that whole pay it forward thing that you always hear about. Doing something for somebody just because. The Knights of the Round Table is essentially that. It's a platform where words of wisdom can go out to the ears of those who want to receive it. We're not trying to convert anybody into anything. We're not trying to tell anybody that you have to follow our way. It's our way or the highway. It's about basically trying to enlighten humanity to the extent that we can reach that higher level of existence if it's there.
And it ain't about ranting and raving. It's fixing problems, solutions.
Well, you know, honestly, when people tell me I'm ranting or when they tell me that I'm on a soapbox, I really get disheartened. I really get offended by that. Because I'm trying to do something positive to put a message out there that's going to hopefully benefit somebody to make them feel worthy about themselves or, you know, to maybe give them some sort of insight that they hadn't had before. And that's what the Knights of the Round Table is about. We come together, we don't always agree on things, but we respectfully disagree and talk to each other, and we talk through the problems. You know, if a lot of more people in this world talk through the problems, they wouldn't be punching each other in the face or shooting each other or, you know, doing the things that they do to each other. I was told somewhere in this world if somebody's starving to death, my heart says it's wrong. I need to do something about it. So I get out here and I talk to people and I say, you know, hey, if you're in that neighborhood, check and see if there's somebody starving. You know, if I got some money I can send you or whatever, you take it to them and you feed them or, you know, whatever has to be done. And that's the positive pebbles that I'm throwing out there to tell everybody everyone has power. In your neighborhood, you got power. You could either hate your neighbor or you could help your neighbor. It's a choice. And so, if all I got to offer you at this point in time is my words, if I don't have no money to offer you, then I got to speak the words I got. That's it, you know. I don't have the funds to save the world. I don't have the military strength to stop the wars. I don't have the resources that everybody has. What I got is words of wisdom from 51 years of life and trials and tribulations. And I got a heart that says that I just can't seem to want to walk away. I tried many times. I tried to walk away from this. I even set myself deadlines that would shame me if I couldn't make my deadlines for my mad science or whatever. I tried to give myself a way out. I tried to force my way out, but my heart just kept bringing me back because my friends would tell me there is a need for what you have to say. And I'm telling you, my friends, that there is a need for what you have to say. That's what the round table's about. The round table idea in itself is there's no corner, there's no head of the table, there's no king setting up there, and he's the dictator of all that has. You do what I say, and that's that.
Nah, you ain't there to rule, you're there to serve. That's what a king does.
Well, it has to...
So it was you just been filling up my pond with all that gravel?
Yeah.
Huh.
I was throwing all the positive pebbles in the pond. I got carried away. Sorry, brother. I'll come over and help you dig them out. We'll put them in somebody else's pond.
Well, I got a better solution. Just start throwing them in the middle. I want an island in the middle. Be a nice little getaway.
You know, I told a story. Quite some time back, a few shows back, I told a story about my son. My son's probably about 7 years old, maybe eight. I don't know. He was real young. He's probably about seven. And we were standing outside. It was nighttime, and we looked over there, and there's this giant, big old pile of gravel that because we just moved into this property, and to get to where we were standing, we had to walk through the mud. And so I looked over there at that pile, and I looked down at my son. I said, "Hey, son." I said, "What, Dad?" I said, "Well, how about you and I, we take that pile and we make us a walkway over there to the house so we don't have to walk through the mud no more." And he's all like, "Dad, that's a giant pile. How are we going to move that?" And I said, "Well, we can take a couple of these buckets over here. We just put just a little bit in at a time and we just walk around and talk and have a good time and talk about life and just pick away at it, and eventually you'll look over and that pile will be gone." So we started that. My son and I, he had a little few rocks in his bucket, and he'd walk over there and he'd pour them on the walkway, and then I would do the same, and we just kept doing that. We were talking, laughing, and having a good time. Then my wife and my daughter looked outside, and they seen us doing that, and asked us what we were doing, and we told them we're trying to make us a walkway so we don't all have to go through the mud to get to the car and stuff. My daughter and my wife jumped in there, and we just kept on picking away at it, and as a family, we had fun. We talked about all kinds of stuff and laughed and joked and picked on each other and stuff. And before it was all said and done, we had a beautiful walkway up to the house. And my daughter and my wife finally went back inside. They had enough of carrying rocks. And me and my son, we finished it up. And my son looked up at me and said, "Dad, the pile's gone." And I said, "See that, boy? We picked and we picked at it just a little bit at a time. And we finally got rid of that, which seemed to be impossible." You know, in my book of faith, Jesus said that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move mountains. You could speak to that mountain, and you could tell that mountain to move, and it would move. And if you understood what he was trying to say, it's essentially the same thing that I told my child, that, you know, that looks like it's so overwhelming, we can't resolve it. You know, it's too big for us. But we went into that knowing that, you know, we're just going to pick out a little bit of time. And so that's what we're doing to the world out there. The world is in a mess, and we got to pick at it a little bit of time. We got to keep throwing these positive pebbles out there. Otherwise, it just stays there, you know. And before too long, with all these Knights of the Round Table, see, the wonderful thing about cyberspace is it's so fast that we can build a larger table. We just keep stretching this table out and put more people around the table and continue this process until everyone in the world has a voice and everyone in the world has an ear that they can hear the common sense coming from all different directions. There is power in the spoken word. There's been war started over words. There's been love started over words. There's been many of brilliant speeches out there in this world that should have resolved a lot of things. Had those speeches resonated through all the ears and hearts of man, we could have fixed this world already. I'm just one of the other guys out there who believes in that dream enough that I'm going to try to keep those words going. I'm going to try to keep the power of the spoken word resonating out there. Those are the positive pebbles that I keep talking about. And every time one of you guys joins in on the chat, that's another positive pebble in the pond. And that ripple gets larger and larger. For every single night that we add to the table, that ripple gets even larger. And if we kept this momentum going continuously, it's like the pay it forward. Next thing you know, everyone has a smile on their face. That's the true meaning of the Knights of the Round Table. By myself, I'm just a guy throwing pebbles in the pond. But with all of you guys together, we're turning those pebbles into waves. And before it's all said and done, we're turning those pebbles into a tsunami in the good sense.
Yeah.
Could you imagine a tsunami of love that just swept across the entire face of the globe and warmed everybody's heart? Could you imagine what we could do if people were in the moment of caring for one another? Just like every tragedy that ever occurs, I can't tell you how many personal times that I've been to a funeral for a family member when I stood up in front of that family and I begged and pleaded to them. I said, it should not take a tragedy such as this to bring us together. Do you remember the days that we had family reunions? Do you remember the days that we had large family meals together? It should not take this to bring us together.
These Mexican families down here on Sundays, oh my goodness, you go to the park and the whole park is covered. And you sit there and you're wondering, I wonder how many families are here. And the truth of the matter, it's only two or three. Some big families. Some guys get together.
They understand.
There's something a lot of people don't know about a lot of the Mexican families. And this will blow your mind. when the Jews were spread out across the face of the earth. A lot of them went to Mexico. There's not many Mexican people I know that don't lay rock for a living. Think about that. They got this deal when the girl comes of age. You remember the bar mitzvah? Well, they got the deal with the girl. For every tradition that you see in the Jewish families, you'll find out that a lot of the Mexican families, not all the Mexican people, but you're going to find out that a lot of Mexico is basically downline, I guess you'd say, or they're genetically they're the Jews.
They're related to each other.
Yes, they are.
And their families.
I try to tell a lot of them that, and they just won't believe me until I tell them to stop. And I start listing out traditions. I said, well, what do you do? And you know what? They keep doing this because their grandmothers and their grandfathers and their great grandparents and everything did it. So they keep the tradition alive, but they are very family, extremely family oriented. And they
well,
love
that's where your strength comes from.
And cook out. It's amazing.
I need to step out for a moment, guys. You want to take the rope of the helm or whatever?
Oh, me and Barry?
Yeah.
I'll show
you.
Well,
you got the show. Behave yourself.
me too, Bubba. Go tease your hair and get some hairspray in there. We love that Einstein haircut. Huh.
Be right
well,
back.
You know, guys. You know, guys, I remember a time in my life growing up that I came from a large extended family. I think I had probably six uncles and aunts on one side and probably five or six on the other side. And regardless, every time an aunt or one of my cousins had a birthday party, we were over there and all members of the family attended. It was a very, very strong unit family that I grew up in. And now I look at society, and that does not exist in our society anymore. If you look at societies even now in the world that have a very, very strong family unit, you'll see that those societies are stable. But when you take the family unit out of a society, you see what's happening now in a North American Canada, where our family's becoming totally destabilized. It's really, really important that we connect with family. And, you know, it's hard now because people are so busy and they got their own lives. If you ask people now if they spend time at Christmas time with, well, sure, Christmas time we all get together, but any other time of the year you don't have people getting together. And that's something I grew up with, and I remember it very vividly. It was a rewarding part of my life, and now I see the society's completely gone the opposite direction. We need to reshape those family bonds. It's vital in our society.
Christmas, Easter, and Halloween used to be fun until I found out that it was pagan stuff. Oh my goodness, the pardoned saint of thieves, Santa Claus, oh my goodness, the Easter Bunny, oh man, an image of fertility, and then, oh, Halloween, well, you know, hey, Halloween is Halloween, man.
The celebration of the devil, let's go celebrate him, the thing to do.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, when you're kids, until you knew better, now that you have knowledge and you're going, oh man, well, it kind of spoiled everything. You know, there's other things. Forsake not the fellowshipping of yourselves together. These big these big reunions and family reunions and all that stuff, it those are meant to be. That's what it means. Forsake not the assembling of thyself together.
Well, really, that's part of our human experience is sharing with our family.
Nowadays, we got transportation. We all live so far from each other. It's kind of hard to do. It used to be what used to be a community. The community was a set of families and extended families and extended families. Now, I used to walk down the streets of Roscoe, by gosh, Texas. I remember an old man. He said, hey, who's your daddy? Some old man sitting on a porch sipping some tea. Who's your daddy? Do I know your daddy? That's the way it was when he was growing up. He just wanted to know who you are and whose kid you were so he could tell you stories about your family. Kind of like living on a reservation, you know? live on a reservation, you know, there's stories, man. There's family stories that pass on down. We don't have that no more.
Well, the thing about reservations is they don't throw Grandpa and Grandma and the old folks home.
Under the bush. Yes, they listen to them.
That's right.
That's their source of knowledge.
Because the elders have the knowledge.
I got to share one positive experience with you guys this week, okay? I've got to share this with you because I'm seeing an absolute awakening in my community about the vaccine issue. Friday night after my tribute to Rick Champagne on the Ocelli effect, I had 8 people sit in my living room and I got my hands on a copy of the movie Vaxxed. And we all watched it, and the tears coming out of these girls' eyes when they started to realize what was going on was just overwhelming, guys. Well, those people went and told some other people. Last night I had another 4 people sitting here, and I put the movie on, and I paused it at points and talked to them. Yesterday morning I had Andrea and Richie and Doug and Mary over here, and they watch it. In the last 2 and a half days, I've had, I think, 10 or 12 people sit and watch this movie, and every one of them is going out the door just appalled. My friend Andrina, her best friend owns the movie theater in Kitimat, which is a small town about 60 kilometers from Terrace here, and she got in touch with him yesterday, and we're going to air Vax at the Kitimat Theater here in about 10 days. It's going to be put in the paper. We're approaching the local newspaper here, the local theater here. I've got Dr. Yi, who's a naturopath doctor here in town, is going to back up an airing of Vax at our local theater here. And when people see this movie, guys, it's a movie that everybody must see. You must get your hands on a copy of this and share it with your friends. Because when people start to realize, when people really start to realize that this is going on, the response is just, the response from everybody that sat here and watched it in the last couple of days was the same, that they're going to go out and tell their friends, and they're going to share this around, and they're going to tell 10 friends. And this is a small community, but I just see an unbelievable wave all of a sudden of young people that are actually going, hey, this is really messed up, and it's time to speak against it. And everybody that left here in the last 2 days came to the same conclusion, that we will do everything that we can to get the word out, to share it with our friends and neighbors. So a small thing can grow into a wave. Like you said, this is a tidal wave growing in Terrace right now. It really is. I'm just inspired to see it. Folks want to know. People are seeking knowledge. And put that movie in front of guys and let them watch it. And it will blow them away. So, a positive note in Terrace, D.C. this week.
Well, that's the way it happens, man.
I just had to share that with you guys. I'm inspired, guys. I really am. I'm inspired.
You're the other guy filling my pond up with pebbles.
You're going to have a continent, buddy. You're not going to have an island. You're going to have a continent.
Well, God, at least throw them in the middle. Throw them in the middle. And make the pond small.
Well, we're going to air this movie in both theaters here up north in the next 3 weeks. That's our objective. And the community is going to be made aware of it. There's going to be an open invitation, free attendance. Don't have to pay. We'll look after it. Just come and watch this information, folks. Because it will have the same effect.
Tell the people the name of the movie. Tell the people the name of the movie and where they can get a hold of it, and spell it out so it's not misunderstood.
Vaxxed. Right. It's called
Vax.
Vaxed. Vaxxed the movie. Robert De Niro was the one that spearheaded this movie. They were actually, of course, you guys already know this, that they were going to play it at the Trifecta. The producer of that movie was interviewed 2 hours before the first airing was supposed to go on at the Trifecta. And after the interview with the producer of the movie was pulled. Of course, they don't want this information out. They want to quash it. It's being quashed in a lot of avenues in the internet. They're trying to stop people from seeing this movie. But everybody you know has to see this movie, folks. You really do. Because your attitude will change forever. You'll never want to put another vaccine in your body or somebody you love, and you will speak out against it. So, something, a real powerful tool, all I can say, guys. And it really impacts people.
You know,
yeah,
I'm saying
they want to give my wife a vaccine, and she came unglued.
I thought they were
going to bring in doctors with a sedative to calm her butt down.
I'm sitting here looking at something that Jermaine posted into the chat room, and this would have been a great addition to Mad Science, but it also it also plays in along the lines of the subject that we're talking about today, about how we can help each other and another positive pebble out there. This is an article from 1967, April of 1967. 25 years ago is what it says on there. There's a submarine. Stephen posted it?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought Jermaine posted it. Okay, thanks, Stephen. Apologize for that. But either way, it's still another part of what I've been talking about. See, this information, I would have never saw this information had it been not for Stephen pointing it out. But this is brilliant. I mean, it talks about the EMS-1 was built by a professor that this thing basically doesn't use pumps or propellers. It uses an electromagnetic field in salt water to move that thing along. Whereas this would be more for the mad science show, it's still a proof of concept of what I'm talking about as far as the power of our words and the power of the pen and so on down the line. It talks about the fact that together we got solutions for everything under the sun. It doesn't matter what subject that we're talking about. We can find a resolution. We can find a solution. People like Stephen in the deal, all of you guys, you got some brilliance about you. That you sometimes, I know you're all humble men, and you don't give yourself credit like you should. You should give yourself credit because you are that missing piece of the puzzle. You know, I talked earlier about a picture that was on the Knights Round Table podcast, but there's many pictures down on there. One of the most important ones that I've seen that I got going on down there. And you scroll down halfway, and in between this hacker attack a banner I got up there, because we've been hacked before, doesn't matter. But either way, this picture says it all. And what you see in this picture is a puzzle laying in the center of a circle, and there's people surrounding this piece of the puzzle, these puzzle pieces, and there's one person standing outside the circle. And it says, you are the missing piece. You understand how profound that one little picture is?
Because that makes good sense.
Each and every one of you have a piece of that puzzle. And that puzzle that I keep talking about that's on the table, unless that one last piece is in there, you will never have a complete picture of what it is we're trying to work on. We can make the world a better place. Heck, little inventions like that. That's 1967, man. You realize how far you could take that? There's other things that you could expand that technology in. You know, as far as maybe building a flotation device with a revolving gear in the center of it that it's using the magnetic field of these coils to actually cause mechanical motion and turn things. You know, like I said, I know that's more of a mad science kind of deal, but it's impressive enough that I think I'm going to post that up on the the channel here, on the website. But what I'm mostly trying to say is and point out is that Stephen came along and he posted something there to some might. I think that is a significant. But what it is, it is another piece of the puzzle that just got thrown Absolutely. Onto the table. You guys understand what I'm trying to say here?
Of course, it's relevant. Everything's relevant. We're all working on different avenues to solve to solve the problem, and everybody contributes a little piece to the puzzle. Boy, all of a sudden we've got a picture.
Yeah.
And I say that, you know, one of the greatest opening lines that I can come up with now for people is I ask them if they'd like to build a house that doesn't burn. How would you like to build a house that will never burn? And people go, huh? What? I started a conversation a couple days ago with two firefighters in the dressing room getting ready to play hockey. And I said, you know, how would you guys like to build houses that don't burn? And they looked at me with a completely dumbfounded look on their face, and I explained to them in 2 minutes exactly what hempcrete can do, how it's constructed, and what it will do when we start building all our houses out of it, because that's where we're going to go in the future. I honestly believe that. And I ran a couple facts by them. These guys, you know, never heard of this before in their lives. And I sent them to, I gave them a couple of websites to go to, and they left the dressing room. Well, they came back in Friday, And one of them said, you know, this information is absolutely incredible. Why aren't we building our houses like this? We'd stop deforestation of the planet. We would be planting thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of acres of industrial hemp all over the planet. We'd create a new industry that would be totally efficient and totally conducive to what the planet wants. If we're producing a product that has no chemical effect, has no pollution, has no impact on the planet. And the number one beauty of it all is that we stop deforesting this planet, because production of oxygen is becoming an issue in our world. Most people aren't aware of that, but it is becoming an issue. I've studied two reports that I really studied closely, and I vetted the information, was that now scientists from NOAA are saying that 40% of our plankton in the ocean are no longer with us. And we all know that plankton produces 60% of our oxygen on this planet. So we've lost 40% of 60% production capability. It works out to about 28% of our oxygen production or capabilities are now gone on this planet. And of course the rest comes through photosynthesis on trees. Well, we've got to stop cutting down trees. We've got to reverse this trend, because it's becoming an issue in our society, along with lots of others. When I get talking about hemp, guys, it fills me with absolute inspiration. It really does, because it's got the answer to, I would say, 90% of our problems on this planet.
Thomas threw also out there another piece of the puzzle on there when he talked about a plant called kudzu. And so between kudzu and hemp, you've got fibers that would make clothing and bricks. And you just like you told me at one time, Barry, I think you said there's like 50,000 or more things that could be made with hemp, you know. And here's the thing I've been trying to point out all along. You know, we got governments out there that regulate everything under the sun. We got naysayers and our backs are against the wall when it comes to corporation and those who have funding to do whatever it is that they do, that basically they control the market. Well, they don't control all of us. Otherwise, you know, there's too many of us. If we decide that we want to start building hempcrete factories, there ain't nothing they can do about it. We just do it. Look, I'm not going to ask the government for permission to put a pond on my property. I'm just going to do it. I'm not going to ask them for permission to put solar panels or wind turbines up on my property. I'm just going to do it. It's my property, you know. And if you learn a few tricks about laws and legalities of different certain things, you'll know that certain phrases and certain words will give you more power than others. Such as the simplest example is I went to the county clerk's office in my county, and I asked her a question, and it was a loaded question because I already knew the answer, but I wanted to see whether or not this lady would verify it or not. And before it was all said and done, she verified my suspicions all along, and it came out of her mouth before she realized what she just said to me. Alright, I asked her, I said, how do I get my property switched over from residential to private property? And this is her exact words, what she said. She said, if we did that, then we wouldn't have no way to tax you. And so just the terminology between private property and residential property is the tax base, the loophole right there. If your property is listed as residential, then that says that you're opting into the system that says that the government will provide you with firefighting, and it will provide you with medical, you know, ambulance service and road repairs and stuff like that. But if it's private property, you even actually have a different sign where on that, like brown signs are private roads that have to be maintained by the property owner themselves. No, nobody will pave it. Nobody will grade it or anything like that. And you don't have these services because it's privately owned land. But the moment you patch a residential on there, that sign will change to a green sign, which now says that you are part of the system, that now you get all the benefits. You get taxed from the local school in your neighborhood, even if you don't have a child in the school, because you own property. They'll take your property values and tax you accordingly to help pay for the local school up there. Which is ironic, because the town that I live in, I don't actually live in the town, but I have an address from that town. And I know for a fact that they will not annex my piece of property as to be part of the actual population of that town. However, they will accept, because I use that mailing address, my tax money, to further for that school. And so if you know enough about legal stuff and laws and stuff, you can literally opt out of that system. You don't have to ask the government for permission to build something onto your property. Where I'm at, I'm in a county where it's not zoned. There's no zoning laws. I don't have to go get a permit to build a shed on my property. The farmers out here, they've been wonderful about it, because the farmers own thousands of acres of land and they farm, and they don't want to be fighting with permits and in the city to build a new barn or, a place for their cattle to live in or whatever. They want to just be able to utilize their land and do it freely without having any problems from the government. So every time zoning comes up on the ballot, they rally together and they fight against it. And since these farmers out here are some of the wealthiest landowners in the entire 800 square miles of Johnson County, then they have a lot of power and a lot of say in the community. And so
it's amazing what a community can do when they stand together, issues is.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to get the world to understand and realize, that they got that power too.
It's also imperative, like you said earlier, Shaziz, that people start to learn the law and understand what your constitution says and how it's being violated by zone regulations, by municipalities. I'm not a legal expert, but I've talked to some people that are, and I wish I could retain. I don't have the kind of brain that can retain all the information. But all I can say to people is that what they're doing is illegal, and if you learn the law and study the constitution, you'll be able to defy them in a court of law. Period.
Well,
that's what
somebody said, knowledge is power, and those with the knowledge, they obviously have the power. They know what they can and can't do to you. They know how they can get around to what they can and can't do you using loopholes and legal
words.
And
when they recognize that you know the law, they just back right off.
Yeah.
Period. Because they know they're gonna lose. But unfortunately, 90% of the population doesn't know the law. And when they walk into a court of law, it isn't a court of law. It is a charade, because they're already guilty no matter what happens before they walk in the door, because it's all predetermined.
Yeah.
Of course, the courts work with the private prison systems. The private prison systems grease the back pocket of the judges and the lawyers. It's just a big game.
But see, the trick to this whole deal, Barry, is to do what we're doing right now with your neighbors.
Talk about it.
Get there and talk about it. A lot of people say, all you guys do is talk, and that's it. Nothing ever gets done. All you talk. But I'd like to hear from some of those listeners out there that took our advice and actually went out and got something accomplished in their own communities. I'd like to hear those stories. Because if I give somebody a good idea, such as find out whether or not your land is residential or private property, and then you'll know where you stand as far as the government and taxes, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's words of wisdom. And that's a valuable set of wisdom, because look how much taxes you pay every year for just owning property that you already paid for.
It's absolute theft.
Yeah. There are ways to back out of the system that you've been basically suckered into. It's like the whole...
Well, I took a complete stand against this system in my life, and I'm living as a free man now. I am. I defy the government to come and take me for income tax returns, because I refuse to send them, because I know what my Charter of Rights and Freedoms says, and every time the government comes down on me about my income tax, I refer to Chapter 52 and Chapter 54 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and they don't bother me again, because they know what they're doing is illegal. But now we have thousands of Canadians that are doing the same thing in Canada. They're becoming aware of the law, and when you put it in their face, they back down.
Yeah, in my area, in the state that I live in, a person under the age of 18 can't be legally involved in a contract. You can't make a contract with somebody under the age of 18. They have to be 18 years old before they're legally able to enter into a contract. But if you go back all the way to the birth certificate / social security card and all that kind of stuff, and you think about how your parents, as representatives of you when you were under the age of 18, they made your choices for you and that kind of stuff, you didn't enter into that contract legally. And so at a certain age, if you wanted out of that contract, you could get out of that contract because it was done on your behalf. But now that you're old enough to choose for yourself whether or not you want to be a portion of that, then you have the right to get out. It's a lot more complicated than I got the words to explain, because once again, like Barry said, I'm not a lawyer and I can't retain all the information, but the information is out there. And you know, there's been a lot of money made in your name by somebody out there. There's money that probably rightfully belongs to you that you probably will never see. And it's knowledge that they wouldn't want everybody and his brother to know, because it would shake their wallet to the foundations. It'd probably cause their wallet to implode as the money would fly out of their pocket so fast it'd make their head spin. But nonetheless, if you understand the words that are coming out of the mouths of the judge and the attorneys and the lawmen out there, like you said, when you walk into court, you might as well hang it up. You've already lost. If you don't know what to say, then the best thing is to not say nothing at all. Because you can literally trap yourself into... I've watched this happen with my daughter. They literally got her to agree to something that gave them jurisdiction, and she didn't understand what it was she just did. I understood, because I've been around the block long enough, I could understand what they were saying, and since I wasn't an attorney, I wasn't allowed to speak on her behalf. And I couldn't do nothing for her, because she was already stuck in the mess. But she gave them jurisdiction over a certain subject, and there it was. You know, it's too late. She done opted in. And it was just by not knowing what to say, not having a representative of somebody who understood the language of what they were saying, and not knowing the rules of the game. Man, it's like this, Barry. If you and I started playing a game, I told you about a new game I designed, and as we're playing this game, if I keep changing the rules on you all the time, you ain't got Snowball's chance in heck of winning, do you?
Well, I don't think so, unless I could change the rules too.
Yeah, well, I hope it's all right for you to change the rules, then you'd have a chance, because your rules might, you know, it'd be like playing chess. You might... you might get me in checkmate or something like that. Check or whatever. I don't remember the rules on chess. It's complicated. But nonetheless, you'd have a chance to beat me then. But
I would. So, you know what? It's really like you're saying, which is, it's imperative that, I know people are really busy in their lives, but when it comes to the court system, you really got to educate yourself a little bit before you walk in there, because if you don't, you don't have a snowball's chance in hell of surviving. They're going to win no matter what you do, because I said most of the decisions in any case now before you can go into court is predetermined. Yeah. And that sounds crazy, but it's true. So once you recognize that, then it's imperative that you inform yourself about the law and what your position is when you walk into the court. You can ask the judge certain questions that'll put him right on the spot, i.e., are you acting, I forget the exact phrase, but I wish I could remember that exact phrase because I've heard it many times, but you can put the judge right on the spot before the proceedings even start in the court of law and remind him of his oath and his duty and make sure that he is sworn into it and have that on record.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of things you can do to defy the court systems. You just got to get educated.
Before you get too far away from that subject, let me point out one big red flag that everybody should be aware of when dealing with the police or the judges or attorneys. If you start quoting the Constitution in court and you see an adverse reaction on the judge, the attorney, or the lawman, you should be worried. Because first off, each and every one of these had to take an oath to uphold the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And if that scares them that you're quoting the Constitution to them, then their agenda isn't on your behalf at all. Even the judge is a representative of that document to protect your, to serve and protect and uphold the Constitution, which in here in the United States is the law of the land. But whenever you start to try to quote it to a police officer or a judge or an attorney, and they look at you like you're some sort of tinfoil hat nutcase, oh, there's another one in constitutionalist, guys, you know. There's another one that free man's on the land. Here we go. You know, that's when you should be worried.
Yeah, that's the expression you want to put to the judges. You swear to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America today, Your Honor. I believe it's a statement that you give to the judge, and it really puts them on the spot, because they're going, uh-oh, this guy might have some knowledge, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Hey, see, George, what do we do now? Next, dismissed.
You don't see the judge raising their hand to you and another hand on the book. You don't see them saying, do you swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Do you swear to uphold the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights, so help me God? You don't see that. No, it's on you. You're the one. You got to prove yourself to them before you can step into their gates.
Well, I've seen a lot of people put that question to the judge before they go, before they start the proceedings, and it really puts them on the spot, guys. So there you go. And it's a total legal question. It's an outright statement. It's, you're asking the judge a question, and he has to answer.
Yep.
And if he answers yes, and you can prove that he isn't in a court of law, well, bye-bye, judge. Period. What a weapon we can use.
Well, that's it. That's another positive pebble out there for everybody to add to their toolbox, you know?
Yeah, it's a positive pebble, but it's also a weapon, because we're fighting a monster, and we need weapons to fight the monster.
Well, yeah.
And that's an exceptional weapon to use.
Well, if you're going to build a wall and or a fortress against the beast, and you need to take all these positive pebbles into your toolbox and use them as the foundation, you know what I'm saying?
Because exactly.
They've already got you where they want you, because right now you don't know. That's the whole key. It's what you don't know that gets you in trouble.
Exactly. So there's a positive note for today for sure.
Yep.
You're going into a court of law, spend a little bit of time. John Durash is one gentleman that I talk to a lot. He had the Liberty Alliance in the States. They were challenging all the courts. And I have his contact number, and anybody ever wants to get in touch with him, he'll talk to anybody anytime about legalities in court. So get in touch with me, and I'll forward his information to you.
Cool.
Anytime.
That's another thing that, you know, those folks out there who've already studied this, they put information out there for people. You just got to read through it. But, you know, I'd like to see some sort of the law book for dummies kind of deal. For me, you know, I need a law book for dummies. Things not to say, things to say. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because we're all dummies when it comes to the court system.
Yeah.
I mean, the laws are written in ways that most people can't even begin to understand. And of course, we need a lawyer, and the lawyer is already paid, and he knows what's going on. The judge knows what's going on. It's just a circus.
You walk into a courtroom, and you've got that feeling of fear in your heart, then you've already got a problem.
You're already lost.
Yep.
Because that's what they want you to. They want you to be in a state of fear when you walk in there and treat that judge like he's God.
To this very day, if I have any interactions with law enforcement or anybody of perceived authority, I immediately have the adrenaline's rushing through my body, my heart rate changes, my mind goes into tunnel vision, because I'm trying to focus in on what I am not to say, what I'm not to do, you know, keep my hands in plain sight and all this kind of stuff. So if a man fears his government, then he ought to be, like Thomas Jefferson said, the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. And that means you got to pay attention. That means you got to be knowledgeable. You got to understand where your rights and freedoms come from. Otherwise, these guys that I now call armed revenue generators for the state, they will take your money. They'll take your freedom. They'll haul you off to jail, and if necessary, if it's escalated too far, they'll even take your life and claim justification for doing so.
Yep, he slipped, fell, shot himself twice in the back of the head.
Look, this system wasn't built overnight. We got our backs up against the wall. We got some catching up to do, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, there's a whole bunch of Canadians are going to go to jail here in the next 3 or 4 months. Hundreds of thousands of Canadians are going to go to jail. Because our government right now is almost in the final process of passing a law that we are not allowed to talk against Islamic radicalization or Muslims in any shape or form in Canada. An outright, blatant attack on our free speech. It's got the whole country up in arms. And I'm online sites that have 5, 10, 15, 20,000 people on each one of them, and those numbers are growing every day as people become aware of just how bad Trudeau is.
Are they going to do the same thing for the atheists, for the Buddhists, for the Hindu, for
Christians?
The
Christians, yeah.
Are they going to do the same thing?
This is only one sector of society that they are focusing on. What is going on right now in our country, guys, is just beyond anything I can even begin to explain to you what's going on inside our Trudeau government. But in the same mouthful, Trudeau is a confessed Muslim. All his efforts now are towards Islamic states. Canada, in his first year in power, had a deficit of $37 billion, which the Trudeau government promised to keep at $10 billion max the first year in power. And now, where'd all that money go? Well, if you look at where all the money went, it went to Islamic countries. Out of that $37 billion, $34 billion of our money was sent offshore to countries that I wouldn't give a nickel to because I've researched these countries and I know what they represent. This is unbelievable what's going on in Canada. I have never seen Canada starting to rise against the Prime Minister the way we see it happening right now in Canada. So I don't know where it's all going, guys. I'm just absolutely knocked off my feet, but in the same mouthful, I'm not. When Trudeau was running for power, I studied him extensively, and I was screaming at people. But you know what? He has a pretty face. His dad had a so-called good name, but if you ever research Pierre Elliott Trudeau and find out what he was all about, you would be knocked off your chair because he was a member of Skull and Bones, Council of Foreign Relations, attended the Bilderberg meetings, been there all hush-hush back in the 70s, and he also attended the Bohemian Grove. Well, if you look into those four issues alone, you'll come to the conclusion that Pierre Elliott Trudeau was not a good prime minister. Now we have his son, who was a bartender 11 years ago, running our country, and he is just stomping on every law in Canada. It's just appalling to see, and Canadians are rising against it, which is a good thing, but I don't know where we're going in the future here, guys. This is really bad.
We're going to find out, I'm sure. And you know, as far as you know, people claiming discrimination, well, if you're not doing for one what you were going to do for the other, then you know, that's discrimination. So maybe a class action lawsuit from the people, discrimination goes to the doggone courts. You know?
You're going to see movements against Trudeau in the next little while, guys. I'm in touch with the National Advancement Party, the Libertarian Party in Canada. There's grassroots movements forming all over this country now. Large groups of people that are going to stand against what Trudeau is doing in power. I don't know. I actually had a meeting with my representative in government here in Terrace about 5 days ago, and I asked him exactly what we can do right now to attack the Trudeau government. He says, well, because they have a majority, they basically can do anything they want, but when he steps over the line and actually does something that can be called criminal and prosecuted as criminal, then the cards will fall apart. Was his words exactly, because he's watching Trudeau. I mean, we had some real good conversations, even though this guy's a politician. I got right to the point with him on Trudeau, and he absolutely agreed with me, and it was a good conversation. But what we need in Canada right now, Trudeau is going to step over the line. He's being investigated for his trip to Aga Khan's private island, where he flew from Toronto to Miami on Aga Khan's private Learjet, got on a private helicopter with our Minister of Finance and our Minister of Immigration, flew to an island and spent 2 days with one of the leaders, the biggest leaders in the Islamic world today, all under Aga Khan's. The ethics violations that they've done already are astounding. He's being investigated on two other issues right now. One is, of course, at the Trudeau Foundation, where all of a sudden we see all kinds of dirty Chinese money coming into the Trudeau Foundation. We see billionaire Chinese people attending liberal fund meetings, fundraisers, which is a direct ethics violation in Canada. And after these people attend these fundraisers, all of a sudden millions of dollars show up in the Trudeau Foundation from these people that attended the meetings. I mean, it's just blatant corruption in our government. And boy, are we in for a fight here, guys. So we have our problems too. I could go on for Trudeau about an hour. I'm going to be doing a show on Monday night. I don't want to plug other shows, but if anybody wants to hear about Trudeau, Monday night on the Ocelli Effect on American Freedom at 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm bringing in the leader of the Libertarian Party of Canada. I'm bringing in Stephen Garvey from the National Democratic Party, and I'm going to have Nathan Cullen, my MP, step into the conversation for 5 minutes and add some thoughts on Monday night. So we're going to bring people's attention to what Trudeau's doing. That's kind of like my mission right now, because I love my country. Yeah, and I see him destroying you guys.
Check out that show.
Please do.
Buddy typed in a deal that said that there's a deal, you can Google it out there, said students arrested for handing out copies of the Constitution. There's a word out there. Do you know what the word reciprocity means?
No, I don't.
Not too many people out there know what the word reciprocity means. It's a terminology that is frequently used in law enforcement between jurisdictions. Reciprocity is simply definition, if you Google it, you'll see it says the practice of exchanging things with other for mutual benefit, especially privileges granted by one country or organization to another. And it also says down there, the social norm of reciprocity is the expectation that people will respond to each other in a similar ways, responding to gifts and kindness from others or whatever. Essentially, what reciprocity means, what I do for you, you'll do for me. So between jurisdictions, if I want somebody to be extradited, if you find one with a warrant in my town, from my town, that you'll send them over, and vice versa. Or that if I got laws over here, you know, you'll react in kind on your side. You see what I'm saying?
Mm.
But
okay.
It's an important word when you really get down to thinking about what it actually means. You know, when you talk about how there's one segment of society that is getting all these protections, and then you think about minorities, and you think about the, what would they do that for the Christians? Would they do that for the Buddhists? Would they do that for the Muslims? That's one of the powerful terminologies right there, reciprocity. You know, are you going to do this for everybody else, or is this just one particular deal?
Well, it's quite obvious what's going on inside the Trudeau government, so there's another bit of information that I'll look into.
Yeah. If you're not going to do it for us, then why are we going to do that for you? You know, if you're not going to protect us in the same fashion that you're going to protect the, Islamic State, you're not going to do that for the Christians or the Buddhists, then we got an issue here.
Exactly.
See what I mean?
And I'm sure there will be unbelievable backlash in Canada in the next couple of weeks over what the government's trying to do.
Oh, and I'm
unbelievable
sure there will
backlash.
Be. And
when people start to realize, really, she says, when it comes down to it, it's just educating the masses right now, what we're trying to do, exactly the implications of this legislation, it boggles the mind, and it must be stopped. Because when I can't speak my mind against, without being racist, and I'm not a racist person, I believe in immigration. If immigration is done properly, it's a great thing. When people are vetted properly, great thing, no problem. You come to Canada, you're going to add something to the economy, but what we see in Canada right now is a massive influx of people coming from one area of the world where, by their own admission, one-third are radicals, and when they come into the Canada, they get unbelievable amounts of money from the Canadian government, way different than the Canadian government treats its own citizens. it's just so unbelievable what Trudeau is doing. When these people land in Canada, they immediately get a check from the U.S. from the Canadian government for $2,500. And then they're given money to buy furnishings when they land in this new country. And then they're given instant welfare. And of course, they all have 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 children. And every child that you have now in your family, you get $600 a month from the Canadian government. And it's just, my blood is boiling, guys. And Canadian bloods are boiling right now.
Yeah.
We have hundreds of thousands of Canadians that are out of work. Families that are deciding between electricity and food right now. And that sounds corny, a phrase, because I've heard it many times. But that's what we're experiencing in Alberta right now. The ripple effect through our economy is just starting to really make people stand up and go, what the heck is going on inside our government? Like I said, we're in a lot of trouble up here right now.
Steve.
And I know they're going to come and get me here soon. She says, I honestly feel that in my heart. I do. I know if I speak against this government enough that all our conversations are being monitored. This conversation is being monitored right now.
Well, hopefully they're
going to come to
it.
Maybe they are. We also, you know, you should start your show every day you start a show. You should say good morning to the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, or any other government agency that's tuning in to get educated.
Yeah.
This morning, good morning, gentlemen. Good, how are you guys doing today, by the way?
Yeah.
Over there.
Stephen Gibbs.
Anyways.
Posted a definition inside reciprocity, mutually state quality or character of that which is reciprocal. The state of the union are bound to many acts of reciprocity. The Constitution requires that they shall deliver to each other fugitives from justice, that the record of one state properly authenticated shall have full credit in the other states, that the citizens of the state shall be citizens of any state in which they may remove. In some of the states, as in Pennsylvania, the rule with regard to the effect of a discharge under the insolvent laws of another state are reciprocated. Courts of Pennsylvania are respected in that state. A law dictionary adapted to the Constitution and laws of the United States. That's by John, whatever, I can't even pronounce that one. Anyway, it's like some of that terminology that you need to understand, and so that you can not only protect yourself, but understand what's actually occurring. And if you're going to be trying to put together a class action lawsuit, that's one of the questions that I would personally propose to them. Are you going to do the same thing for my group of people that you're doing for these? Otherwise, then, you know, that's what the government's not there to pick out a specific belief or whatever to, you know, you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Exactly. You cannot focus on one sector of society.
Yeah.
That's a direct violation of our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And that's what Canadians are reading right now, is the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says exactly, basically, in the same words that you just said right now, but in slightly different wording.
Yeah.
And that's what people are referring to right now. Mm-hmm. And also our Confederation rules, what was laid down in this country and how it was set up. Once people start getting educated, they have a weapon to use against this government. And that's what we're trying to do.
If you can't get past reciprocity, then you shouldn't be going any further than that. If you're not going to do for everybody what you would have done for the other, you know, and in the whole guise of everybody working together and making this whole thing we call government even work, then you're not representing the people at all. You're choosing, picking
exactly.
And choosing the winners and losers. You know, and that ain't what
government's
about.
Well, people are becoming aware that the government...
Huh?
People are becoming aware that the government is not in their best interest in any shape or form. And when people come to that conclusion, you see their blood start to boil. And we're seeing it now, guys.
Well,
we're seeing an awakening.
And
we are.
My whole concern about that issue is that, you know, it could literally lead to violence. You know?
No, you know what, when people, you know, anybody that starts going down the rabbit holes and starts to realize exactly what's going on, their first reaction is going to be anger. It would be a normal human reaction. But you know, I really, when I talk to people, I say, look, you know, when you start looking into this stuff, it's going to make you mad. But don't get, you know, getting mad isn't going to solve it. We have solutions. We have ways that every one of us can contribute to destroying it.
That's right.
That is the way that's the way we deal with it, because if we ever get violent with the government, I'm telling you, folks, if we go against the government in violence, they are going to win. I hate to say that, but I honestly believe they have little toys set aside for that particular issue when it arises in society.
No,
so we have to beat them.
We have
to
beat
them. I have no doubt about it either.
That's why when you're playing chess, when you're playing chess with somebody and you know the rules, you at least level the playing field. Well, the Constitution is your rule book right there, and it's supposed to be their rule book too. And if you know that thing inside and out, and you step into a courtroom and you recognize that that court is no longer under this jurisdiction. Yeah, there's like folks that walk in there and they'll say, is this criminal or civil, you know? And they know the terminology to put the judge in a place and establish jurisdiction or lack thereof, and that's how they're able to, you know, win a case. And
well, exactly, because when you put the judge in that position, guys, he knows all of a sudden in the back of his mind that you know the Constitution, and when you ask the judge to do that prior to a court proceeding, it's all recorded. And I said, if he steps outside those bounds and there's any proof of it all, he knows immediately he's going to be removed from that big paying job where he has incredible power.
Yep.
So it puts them on the spot. It makes them, believe it or not, in the back of their minds, they're going, wait a second, if I step over the bounds here, then I could be in real trouble and this could be all gone. So it forces them actually to actually abide by the Constitution. Wow, what a concept that would be, eh?
Yeah, and, you know,
but it does work. You know, you can get arrested now for passing out jury information in front of a courtroom in the United States of America. That's happening all over the place. People are standing in front of a courtroom passing out information about juries and what your rights are as citizens, because most people don't know. But if they're arresting people for sharing factual information with the public. That's what we're dealing with now in society, and it's only going to get worse, guys.
Well,
we've got to nip the bud right now.
Muddy said to get a Google up student's handle, handout copy, or student
copies the Constitution and getting arrested.
Yeah, I'm gonna Google that right now, just to see.
Yeah,
what
he just posted that. I'm gonna look at that.
Pop up, but you know, like I said, man, we're sitting here in front of some amazing technology that gives us access to almost instantaneous answers to stuff. And the common sense to me would be that if you got access to that kind of power, you utilize that power to make the world the way you want it to be, you know? You make it a good world. And we're not helpless. That's the point I've been trying to get across all along. You know?
Power, knowledge is power. When you start looking at things you can do every day in your life to fight this, it's unbelievable, some of the things we can do. You know, and it might seem to a person, a small little thing might be irrelevant. What does that mean? It means nothing, but it's like you said, when you start throwing pebbles into a pond, and all of a sudden you got 20 people, and then you got 100 people, and then you got 1,000 people, and then all of a sudden they're telling their two friends, and all of a sudden we've got hundreds of thousands of people throwing pebbles in the little pond, and all of a sudden it's going to drown these guys that are standing in our way. And that's how it's got to be done. It's got to start a grassroots movement, sharing with your friends and neighbors your thoughts and your concerns. People will listen.
One of the other things that I keep pointing out also is that, you know, if you're really sitting there talking about how you want your rights and you're for, you know, social justice and you want everybody to have the same rights and that kind of stuff, then you got to be careful not to use your rights to trample over others, you know. Because,
exactly.
You know, by you getting offended by their First Amendment and trampling over their rights, you know, essentially what you're doing is setting a precedent so that somebody can do the same to you, and eventually where does it stop, you know?
It's called the weapon of political correctness.
The doggone gun issue is one of the biggest issues out there, and free speech is another one of the biggest issues out there. with those two right there alone, if you can't speak out against the government, if you can't have the option of being able to defend yourself against a tyrannical government, then you go down the road that so many other communist nations and socialist nations have went down, dictatorships or whatever, you know. You get somebody in office who just does what he wants, and ain't nothing you can do about it because he's got the power of the army behind it. And if you think that if you think that your own soldiers won't come against you, if you think that your own police officers won't come against you, look back through history and see what's happened. It's not something that ain't happened before. You know, they went around disarming people during Katrina because other people were, you know, doing shenanigans or whatever. So suddenly it was a martial law type situation. Military and the police went door to door taking people's firearms away from them.
The same thing happened in Boston.
Yeah, same thing.
And all that is the same thing with Jade Helm. And all it is conditioning the public to accept military force and military jurisdiction in their communities. Conditions them. So another event happens, of course, society will go, hey, well, we got to do this, we got to do that. We're being set up, of course.
That's why you got to use knowledge and wisdom to, you know, keep the good words going out there. Keep the good, like what Stephen, he's right on top of stuff, man. I love that guy.
So do I. You know, he should be in here.
He puts so much good information out there in the chat room, and, you know, it's all beneficial. It's all to the point. Everything, you know. That's what it's all about. These pieces of the puzzle that we've got going on, you know, they're just a small bit of what could actually be accomplished. If we could bring this round table to its maximum size, if there is a max, there's 9 billion people on the planet. I wish we could get them all to the table. You know, just long
Wouldn't
enough.
That be cool?
Yeah, just long Wouldn't enough to get cool? some common sense going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's my dream, too. I wish I could stand in front of everybody in the world and just share a little bit of information with them for half an hour.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's not going to happen. But we are reaching a lot of people through the Internet. Of course, we're going to see more and more attacks come on the Internet in the next little while. They're already shutting stations down. They're already censoring stuff. And that's just going to get worse. And I hate to say it, but I think the time might come here in the future where us talking like this might not exist in our society, and that's something we really, really have to fight against. Because once we lose our freedom of speech, we are finished as a nation, period.
We're going to keep going here as long as we can, no matter what. And, you know, they do things. They got ways of using denial of service hacks or interrupting streams or whatever, or changing bandwidth. They got ways of
everybody's
doing
got,
that.
Everybody's got to go get a ham radio.
Yeah.
I went and got one. I went and got one this week. And now I can talk to people anywhere in the world if the internet goes down and communications go down. I can still talk to Patty. I can talk to you. I'm going to get your address, and I'm going to get a bunch of other people's. We should all be getting ham radios. We should all be sharing our addresses with each other.
Yeah.
Because we can still communicate. Because, boy, if they ever take away our source of communication, then you're really going to see society in a panic mode.
But and I want to point out to the spy versus spy agencies out there, the alphabet soups, we're not here to try to incite violence or overthrowing of governments or anything. You know, there's a place for government. But the government has to be by the people, for the people, of the people, like the Constitution said. Otherwise, you got to expect that people are going to get frustrated. I live exactly. under the United States Constitution. That's my law of the land. I'm not willing to exchange my law of the land for Sharia law. I don't want to live under Sharia law. It's not my way of life. It's not my way. It's not what was promised to me whenever I took an allegiance to my country. Because when I was going to school, I used to put my hand over my heart and pledge allegiance to the United States of America and stuff, you know. And to some people nowadays, that's not a, you know, they don't want people doing that anymore. They don't want one nation under God or anything like that. But that's what I was raised at, and that was the promise given to me for swearing my allegiance to my country. You know?
But now you might offend somebody by doing that.
Yeah.
So we're not allowed to do it. I say bunk to that, Shaziz.
Yeah, me too. And I you know, you can't change the contract or the rules in the game midstream and expect me not to stand up and speak out against it. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not trying to.
Exactly.
I'm talking to all the people out there with badges on and special credentials to give you certain powers to go out and investigate certain things. while you're listening in on the Shazoo's Mad Science or Knights of the Round Table, understand what we're wanting to do. We're wanting to help the world out there to be common sense thinkers that aren't going to go out and commit crimes and hurt each other, you know. We're wanting to get into our politicians' heads. We're not trying to go over there and kill our brothers and sisters across in the foreign land. We want peace. We want hope. We want love. We want to pave the stones for our children's future. If there's something that you out there as these government agencies know that we don't know, that we need to be aware of, that changes, that makes some sort of extenuating circumstance to the cause, then come on here and jump on the microphone. Tell us about it. You know, that's what we're looking for, is truth. We're looking for honesty. We're not going to keep trying. We're not going to quit trying to spread good messages and knowledge to people, as long as we have the option to get on a microphone and talk to people. We're not going to stop. It's what our Constitution affords us, the freedom of speech, you know. And until that's gone, until the people decide that none of us want it anymore, both parties have to agree to a contract, otherwise it's invalid. And I don't agree to changing the contract. I like the contract the way it is. I like the checks and balances of our government. I like the fact that we get to go vote, and even if some people think it's not it's a waste of time or whatever, I like the fact that people actually have the opportunity to go and voice what they want to say. You know, well, I mean, if you want to protest, protest, but just don't go out there and tear up your own communities and expect that you can lay it all on the government. It's the government's fault. It's the conservatives' fault. It's the liberals' fault. No, it's your fault. You chose that action. You did it. It was your hand that threw the brick. You see what I mean? I used to have to tell my kids this all the time. One of my kids would do something to the other kid. One of them would hit the other one. The other one would turn around and hit the other one back. And then they'd come to me crying, "Oh, Dad, well, such and such hit me," you know. Now, of course, I'm going to try to find out who was the one that initiated the deal to give them a little bit sterner lecture, but I'm also telling the same one that just got hit and hit the other one back. I said, "You're responsible for your actions. You're responsible for your actions. If he hit you, you should come directly to me. I would have went to him, and I would have sorted it out, and you wouldn't be in trouble right now." But you decided to take it to that extreme, and now you're both in the doghouse, because neither one of you should have been hitting each other. You should have resolved it some way or other.
Well, we see the apple cart sure being turned upside down in America right now, and I'm sitting back here, and I really don't know what to make of it all. Your new president there, he's done some things this week that I really like, and he's done a few that I don't, so I'm kind of standoffish of exactly what Trump is up to.
I
looked at the people that he has surrounded himself with, and if you look at every one of Trump's cabinet appointments and you research them, you'll find out that they're either high-level Freemasons or they're involved in Skull and Bones, or they're involved in the Council.
Well, I'm sure they are.
Right? What's going on? And what's going on is he's talking out one side of his face, but he's surrounding himself with people that are contradicting what he is saying in their thoughts and what they've shown in the past.
My deal is,
so you got to look at what he's doing.
My deal is this: I'm not discounting the possibility that he probably could be a Manchurian candidate. I'm not trying to say he is or isn't, but I'm keeping vigilant. I'm watching every move that he makes, and when he starts going down the line of the status quo, I put the word out just like I would anybody else.
Yep, we really got to hold him to the fire.
That's
everything he said.
And that's the only way that we're going to get things done. They may have done this election as a way to appease the public, just to get them all calmed down, thinking that somebody was coming in there to save the day. The cavalry was on its way.
Absolutely, absolutely. We got to look at how this whole charade unfolded. We got to look at indications in comics that told us years ago that he was going to be president. And all of a sudden, this man rises out of nowhere. It's saying everything. He's calling out the press. He's saying this. He's saying that. He's ramping up the American people. He's exposing things to people that they've never even heard before. But when I sit back and I look at it all, you've got the puppet on the right, and you you've got the puppet on the left, and I honestly believe that what he's doing is all a setup. But that's a deep thought, and a lot of people are going to go, ah, you're crazy. Don't say that about our president. He's a great guy. But everything he's doing, I honestly believe he's setting up America to almost worship him in the efforts that he's making to turn things around. I do not believe that Trump will be able to stop the economic collapse that we know is going to come. I mean, people have been saying it for years, but we look at indicators right now all over this planet, guys, and if you look at every world economy right now, every country's economy, and you can look at this information, you'll find out that it's grinding to a halt. And the ripple effect is going to come through, and we're going to see, I honestly believe, we're going to see some tough economics, and it's going to be blamed on Trump, of course.
Well, so
there's a real charade being set up here. We really got to look at everything. You got to look outside the box at everything that's going on. That's all I'm saying.
I'm in hopes that things are going to go well, but I also think back about certain videos that I've seen throughout my lifetime, such as like a demonic spirit being in one body, and when he's done with that body, he leaps into the next body, and he's a totally mm-hmm. different person, and everybody thinks, well, hey, this is a good guy now. No, it ain't the good guy. It's the same spirit. So if Obama might have been the Antichrist on one day, it could very well be that doggone Trump could be the Antichrist today because the spirit of evil jumping from one body to the next. Look, I know that sounds crazy as all get out, but in the world that we live in, if you ain't looking at every possibility, every single aspect, you're going to get blindsided. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
When militaries go into battle, they look at every possibility, they look at every potential, and the ones who overlook something are the ones who usually get beat in that battle. You know, you got things, techniques where they flank them coming from this direction, and they coming from that direction. Well, somebody knows, yeah, they're going to try to flank us, but what we're going to do, we're going to do like they did in Vietnam. We're going to hide under the dirt, and when they run past us, we're going to jump up and stab them and shoot them in the back. You know? I'm worried that the people will fall asleep enough to the point where they get comfortable. Like in the last few days since Trump finally got it inaugurated, I've been kind of relaxed. I feel like, you know, everything's going well, you know, and I always got to throw that in the back of my mind. Wait a second, don't go to sleep just yet, because we've been fooled before. I'm hoping that he's a good man. I'm hoping that he is, you know, a man of God. I'm hoping that he's a man of his word and he does what he's supposed to do. I'm sure he's going to make mistakes. If he is just a man, then everything, you know, it'll work its way out. We got our checks and balances out there. But at the same sense, I'm not holding out hope that he's any kind of savior whatsoever. I'm just saying, there's this guy that seems to me at the moment, at least, slowing down the machine that's mowing us down. You see what I mean?
Oh, he's shaking the apple cart right to the core right now.
Yeah.
And whether, you know, he's doing things that just, I mean, he's actually doing what he said he was going to do. So I'm just going to sit back like Yusha is and watch him very, very closely over the next little while and see where it all goes. But him just alone defunding abortions overseas this week, I know they're going to pass legislation to stop funding of all abortions in the United States. That's going to be put up this week. His attack on the United Nations, defunding of the United Nations, his intent to withdraw from the United Nations, that's speaking volumes, how he's being rejected by the rest of the world. I don't know if this is all, I don't know how the whole charade is being set up, but he is doing things that I like. I can't say I don't, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well,
so we're just going to sit back and watch the whole situation. I will not be fooled.
So far, so good, right?
Well, yeah, so far, so good. He's, like I said, he's shaking it to the core right now. There's a lot of people who like to see him dead right now.
Well, I don't want to see anybody dead. I want to see everybody.
No, I'm being realistic right now. There's a lot of people that...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Unfortunately, that's the world we live in.
I want to see everybody out there take these words of wisdom that we're talking about. And, you know, a lot of times you'll find yourself in a position when you start talking about any subject, people will start cherry-picking your words and picking it apart. And it takes it down a path that you really don't want to go. And then the initial point is lost somewhere in that mess. And so when we're talking about things that are going on out there in the world, it ain't to try to fear monger or to steer anybody in any political direction or religious belief or anything like that. It's just simple this, man. If you look out there and you see what's going on and you're not concerned, then you're asleep. You're asleep at the wheel, and you're going to get blindsided by something. You know, I'm not saying to live your life paranoid. I don't want you to live your life paranoid. I want you to be able to live your life in comfort. But, you know, when Thomas Jefferson said the price of freedom is eternal vigilance, then you got to understand what the depth of that phrase meant. Those words mean something. And it essentially means that if you ain't paying attention, your freedom going to go by the wayside rapidly, because there's those out there they don't want you free, they want to rule you.
Exactly. Well, I think a lot of us are going to be vigilant here in the next little while.
Yep.
You know, anytime we do a show, you know, of course we've got to bring out the negatives that we see in this planet, but in the same mouthful, everything I see negative, we have a solution for it. And I honestly believe that right to the very bottom of my heart. I just read a report, Shazaz, and this was a really good report from Japan. Two peer-reviewed studies now. Radiated soil, of course, is becoming a problem in our society. You can test soil anywhere in the world right now, and you'll find nuclear isotopes in that soil. That's a fact. So what they've done in Japan now, and this was a 2-year study on the effects of industrial hemp on radiated soil. And what they did is they planted industrial hemp on highly radiated soil, 4 different nuclear isotopes in that soil, and after 2 years there was not a trace of a nuclear isotope in that soil. So what it is the vibration of the hemp plant, the way the root system works and how it affects nuclear isotopes, it actually removes them from our soil. So there's a solution. As we go forward in time here, we're going to see more and more nuclear radiation affect the Earth's soil, because we're seeing more and more problems in the nuclear radiatory industry every day of our lives. So here's a solution that we can grasp, and it's simple, and it works. So
yeah.
I always like to make sure that people know that there is solutions, because we have them, guys. But I honestly believe that the window of opportunity to make these changes in our society, I believe that window will close in the future if we don't start climbing through it right now. And that's going to take everybody becoming concerned and becoming active. And I hate to get on and stay on the hemp plant, you know, she says, but when I am the biggest supporter in the world of it right now, because it has the answers to, honest to God, I believe that it has about 90% of the problems we are facing on this earth right now could be turned around if we implemented the widespread use of this plant like it was intended to be. The cannabis plant, there isn't a plant in the world that is more genetically connected to the human body than the cannabis plant. Cannabinoid receptors are in our body. They're meant to be there. Ingesting raw cannabis is now considered to be a superfood. And of course, they don't want you to know that, but it can do so much for the human race, and yet we still see the stigma and the attacks from government and how it's being held back. I see a wave now of people becoming informed about the benefits, and that alone, implemented, guys, could turn this world around. All I'm going to say about it today. I can talk for hours.
We got so many, our resources are abundant. We got so many different potentials of things that would work in perfect harmony with nature. That's why I get so frustrated at some of the people that, you know, say they're out there to save the environment, you know, tree huggers, or whatever you want to call them, you know. Look, if you're standing there protesting with a wooden stick and a paper sign, save the trees, there's something wrong with that picture. All right? And so, common sense has to rule the day. Now, if we're sitting here as mad science guys on Saturdays and nights on Sundays, and we're telling you that there's solutions out there that can resolve the same problem that you're worried about, then work with us. Work with us. Try the hemp solution. What have you got to lose? I mean, come on.
Or just investigate it.
Yeah, investigate it.
Spend time looking at it. And then all of a sudden you'll go, wow, that makes sense, doesn't it? Hey man, that makes sense. Why are we doing that when we could do this?
Yeah.
That'll be the question you ask yourself as you investigate it.
Don't waste your time trying to protest a government that's going to continuously be repetitive in its actions. You know, they continuously make the same mistakes. And it's like that 100 monkey syndrome or something like that. You know, one monkey got the idea how to get out, and everybody else is just, you know, doing the same thing over and over, continuously failing. instead of paying attention to that one piece of the puzzle and making the break for it, they stay in prison and smack that one piece around because, you know, oh, hey, you're different than us. You don't think the way that we do. Well, no, I'm thinking outside the box. That, therefore, the trolls move in, the government agents, the shills, or whatever you want to call them. And, you know.
Well, yeah, you're thinking common sense. Yeah, they don't like people that think common sense. You know, I envision a world here in the future, very, very short time, that the human race awakes to the potential of generating power, where we're not having any impact on the planet. If anything, we're adding to the ecosystems of the planet, of this planet, producing our power needs. And that technology, I know, exists right now in our world. I look at what the world has provided to us to take care of itself. All the herbs that are available, all the plants that are available that fortify the human body, how our human body is just becoming a cesspool of disease and infections and analytics that store in our liver from the hundreds of prescriptions we take during the course of our lifetime. It's all upside down. The sooner we get back to following what this earth laid down for us to use and what she needs to restore, we can make a change, guys. We need to change everything because, you know, I talk about this a lot. And it's something that people really don't grasp right now. But, you know, since 1970, and I'm only going to say this for a second here, but since 1970, the planet has lost, and this is by World Wildlife Federation statistics, and I urge you guys to look into this yourself, that we've lost 52% of the mammals that walked on this planet in 1970. Well, that's only how many years, guys? 47 years? We've lost 52% of the mammals on this planet? Well, going forward, what we're seeing now is an acceleration in that loss. The scale, the spike is going upwards. Because we're destroying the food chain, the very food chain that supports all life on this planet, we are destroying. And if we don't turn that around, then we are going to see things for our children that I would not wish on my worst enemy. And I say that from the very bottom of my heart, that we still have a window of opportunity right now, but we must make these changes if we want to see a future on this planet, she says. And that sounds bleak, but it's not, because we can change it. We need to implement changes now, not 10 years from now.
That's why I beg and plead for people to share these podcasts. Look, folks, this ain't about getting attention personally. It ain't about getting rich or famous or anything like that. Just like Barry, I got a feeling of urgency among me that I think that we got right now some awesome tools and a lot of resources that we could resolve the issues that you're worried about in this world. But it's going to have to be us. It's going to have to be us coming together to do it. We the people, we're not going to get this. There's not going to be some fancy leader that comes out here and magically waves his hand across the land and makes it all right. It's too messed up. It's going to take time. It's going to take people getting up off the couch and getting involved. And I ain't talking about going out there shouting stupid slogans over and over like some walking zombies out there in a deal protesting over something that may or may not be true. I'm talking about if you think that something is seriously an issue, then you get on the phone to your representatives and you ask them, what's the deal here? What's going on? This doesn't comply with what I was told I had rights to, you know? And you work with the system. If you're going to keep that system, then you work with the system. You know, it's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. The baby's got a dirty diaper. You don't throw the baby out with the diaper. You know, the baby's worth saving. The system, if you want to live in a system where you do have a government, then you have to work within that system to do it right. Not go out there and tear up your own communities in order to get things resolved. All that does is give them yet even more power. Calling you terrorists. And when you turn around and you sit there and call your fellow brothers and sisters racist and homophobes and xenophobes and terrorists and all this kind of crud, you can't expect for you them to ever come to your way of thinking because you just insulted them and degraded them. You don't know me. You don't know that person that you just called a racist. You just assume because I said I voted Republican that I'm automatically part of the Ku Klux Klan. You ain't never gonna see old King Shaziz the Terrible being part of no kind of monkey business like the Klan. I don't want to see nobody hung from a tree or abused or just because of the way that they believe. I don't want to see them their life being stolen from them. I might not agree with that individual, but it ain't my purpose in this world to take their life. It's their life. It belongs to them. You know, thou shalt not steal follows right into thou shalt not kill, because when you kill somebody, you just stole from them. You killed two birds with one stone, and you damaged your own freedom in the process. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And yet what we see from the extreme left right now is just insanity.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it just boggles.
And you don't want your
over the minds of these people.
You don't want your children cussing at your their teacher, and you don't want your children cussing at your other children, and you don't want your children cussing at you. Then no cussing from your children. You know, you're teaching them. You're teaching your kids how to live. You're teaching your neighbors how to act. You know, there's a saying out there: you teach people how to treat you. And if you allow certain things, then it becomes the norm. And eventually society gets to the point where it's at right now, where, you know, everybody's dropping the F-bomb. It's a norm. It's just a word, right? Okay, well, maybe it is. Maybe it ain't. Maybe to that guy or gal who's a little bit older than you from a different generation finds that to be offensive, and that's why they're not talking to you or hanging out with you.
Sad.
Yeah.
It is, when you think about it all. It is. Like I said, you know, what really absolutely drives me nuts in the world today is the attack on our children and how our children are being attacked. And you know what? This last couple of days here really inspired me. So just because I know I have 10 more people in my community now that are out screaming at the top of their lungs. Like I said, I'm inspired at some of the things I see right now, but again, what I see happening to our planet right now, it appalls me. I know the information is real, that it's not somebody standing behind A&W saying there's something wrong with the world, that this world is going to actually be looking at an extinction event in as short as, and this is top scientists now, guys, saying this. I mean, really respected individuals that are studying what's going on with our planet are saying that by the year 2030, we could literally be down to maybe 10% or less of all the mammals that walked on the Earth in 1970. And I think about that and I go, well, you know, we're laying down a future right now that, like I said, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And if anything that me and Shaziz have said to you today makes sense, and if you feel the urgency that me and Shaziz feel, because the urgency that me and Shaziz are sharing with you is coming from our hearts. Nowhere else is this information, nowhere else are these thoughts coming from, because Shaziz and me have been on this earth for a lot of years, and we've seen the changes, and we see what's coming. And we're crying out to our fellow man that we love you, and I know you love your children, and I know you love what you have right now, and that can all be taken away if we don't make these changes quickly, guys.
That's right. We're racing the clock, people.
We are.
You know, we've got this doomsday clock that the scientists put out there. You know,
two and a half minutes to midnight.
Yeah, whether you agree or disagree, it's literally we're racing the clock. We're racing it towards World War III, or economic implosion, or society imploding, or whatever. And every time you see an advance where people come together and rally to bring justice to everybody, that's a good sign. That's what we need to keep moving towards, and keep putting the positive pebbles out there in the pond. Keep taking your communities as high as you can to help them out. Find the problems in your community. Come together with all your skills and your talents and resolve those problems on a local basis, and allow that example to spread out to communities next to you. You know, help each other's communities. Pull that word called reciprocity out and go talk to your neighbors about reciprocity. All right? It's an important word. You see what I mean?
It's important
to the law enforcement agencies. It's important to the government. It should be important to you as a neighbor. What I would do for my neighbor, my neighbor would do for me. We know this. You know? And if all communities thought about that one specific word and got up there and says, let's talk about reciprocity today. That's a word of the day. It's not a bad word.
Yeah, let's sit down at the kitchen table tonight while we're having dinner and talk about this and how it implements us and how it's being implemented into society and what it means. There's a good conversation for the dinner time. But unfortunately, we don't do that, and that's what we need to do. We need to get talking about this stuff a lot. Well, and people are shizzes. Like I said, I see lots of positives now in the world.
Well, Barry, it's like, you know, I'm going to keep on trying to keep this network alive as long as I possibly can. And hopefully I'll pass it on to somebody like Jermaine or one of his friends or somebody when they get older and want to take and keep the ball rolling, because I'm sure that somewhere down the line you're always going to have to look out there and kind of try to help each other guide this world in the right direction, because we've gone astray before. Lots of nations have gone astray before. Some nations have even fell. You know, many nations have fell. And they all made the same doggone mistakes. And what we're trying to point out is we've got right now what my friend Steve says, is we got the sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. Right now we have every single answer to every single problem in this world. And if we actually decide to come together, we can resolve the so-called energy crisis. We can resolve all the resources. We can show you how. There's enough brilliant people out here that can show you how to use it to not only benefit each other, but to benefit nature and the planet that we live on. And I'm telling you what, if you smile on nature, nature will smile back. And that's a fact. But if you stomp on nature, the kickback is terrible. It's terrible because it means that the house that you live in is falling in on you.
Yeah, you know? And we've been pooping on her for how many years now, and our planet is really starting to smell like poop, guys.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm going to take away the statement, if we can come together, guys. It's not if. We must. I say that adamantly, that we must overcome our differences and unite under a common banner.
That's what I say.
And that's so easy to do. So easy to do right now. Go ahead.
The clock is ticking, and we can't come. That banner can't be the one that has the UN symbol on there, or the American symbol, or the Russian or the Chinese symbol. It has to have the people symbol on there. We need a new banner for the people, you know? That piece of the puzzle picture that I talked about on tonight's podcast would be an awesome flag. I'd love to have that, right? That would be my flag for the country, for the world, you know. This picture says it all. It's got people in a circle, one person standing outside, and says, you are the missing piece of the puzzle. And until we get all the pieces of the puzzle put together, then we'll never see the big picture. We'll never meet that stage of enlightenment. Some may. Some may already have their life in order, and they might already be in the what the phrase is they call transcending. They might already be transcending to a higher level because they get it. They understand that the world is about love and peace and hope and, you know, higher way of thinking, you know. We're not those cavemen running around butt naked with sharp objects looking for a way to build a fire and then thousands of years later finally discovering clothes. No, we're already at this point in history. We've got all the knowledge necessary to repair and heal the sick and shelter the homeless and feed the hungry. We got it. Now it's time to use it. And that's the rallying cry that I'm throwing out there to the world. Please, stand united with each other. If I'm part of the crowd, you guys go along without me if that's what it takes. Just do it. You see what I mean?
Amen. Yeah, and we're down to the last couple minutes of your show, and I'm going to have to go in a couple minutes.
Yeah,
she says. So, always great talking with you, my friend, and thanks for having me in today and letting people hear three of my thoughts.
Well, that's what it's all about, brother.
Much appreciated.
And we get passionate on this show, man.
Get passionate, because if what's going on in this world right now doesn't drive you nuts, guys, then you don't have a heart, because it's insanity what we see, and it's accelerating. So put your spiritual armor on and get ready for what's coming, and let's solve these problems to this, because we do have the means.
Tearing up the world never got nothing fixed, and peace doesn't ever come from the end of the barrel of a gun. And so with that said, common sense, man. Common sense. Not so common sometimes, but if you can ever get a grasp.
Where is common sense? I can't find any.
Yeah. All right, well, you know, I guess we really don't have time to go around the table for very long. You got anything last you want to tell everybody?
Pretty well, I pretty well said what I had to say tonight, that I believe that time is short and we need to come together and get rid of our breakdowns in our community, in our society, and to really address the issues that we need to address now, because like Jesus said earlier and I said, I don't believe the window of opportunities can be open forever.
No,
so let's get on it, guys.
Thomas, you got any words of wisdom? No? Thomas may went to sleep. He wasn't feeling too good yesterday.
Yeah, and Buddy went to sleep too.
Yeah. And drank.
I hope we're not putting him to sleep there, should
we? We may be. We might be putting the world to sleep, man. But, you know, it's got to be said, man. It's got to be said. If it ain't said, then there's nobody moving forward. You know, sometimes, you know, to lead the charge, you got to say charge. Nobody takes off until you say charge. We got to charge. It's time to go.
Charge. Let's go.
Pick up the tools. Pick up the everything you need. And let's get this thing up. Let's get it done. You know, we can't do this forever. This is Knights 213, you know. 213 times we begged and pleaded for the world to hear our words and to come together and share theirs. That's a long time, folks. 213 times. That's just this show alone. That's not counting the nights or other shows that we get out there and we talk to the world and tell them there's solutions to all the problems. And if you help us out, you know, we can bring our pieces of the puzzle and our tools together and we can help you make this. We can fix it. I'm telling you, we can fix it. That's the best I can say.
You have to go now, Shazuz.
All right. Thanks a lot, Barry. All right, well, everybody, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, and keep hope and love and live, and do the best you can with the bad situation. If you like what you heard here today, please share this podcast on your social media networks. Chances are they might not even pick up on it, but just throw the link out there. Maybe they will. And maybe something that we say will, you know, benefit them in their life. Maybe they'll take in, they'll start working with their communities using some of the ideas we shared with them. And if one person out there learns anything, then all of this is worthwhile. But if 9 billion people learn from the words of wisdom that come out of the mouths of your other brothers and sisters around this world, then we all benefit. Peace and love.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons.
Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king. Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government.
supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away!
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system!
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We're routine to board a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rise that our quiet comes in able. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm
have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hey, hey, to seize the turbo. Always working to seize the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.